Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Inside the Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Mike Parenti is going to join us today. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you too, John.
As always. Yes. Nice to see you. I don't panic now. I know. Oh, but Mike's not supposed to be with him till Wednesday. Don't panic.
That's okay.
You want to explain to them what you explained to me about why you're available on a Tuesday?
Tuesdays are very quiet days for the PFW crew because all we do is our Ask PFW segment. We don't have any player access.
Right, right.
We have Coach Belichick on a conference call, and we did not work Monday because of a Sunday game.
Right.
So we haven't had any player access to work on any of our stories for the week. So it's kind of like we can't really do anything.
You know,
so
you just
I will sit
up for the first hour on every Tuesday, right?
No, I
yeah,
did not.
Exactly.
Well, you want to switch Tuesday and Wednesday? I would gladly do that, by the way, because that is actually easier for me to do Tuesday
as opposed
than
to Wednesday.
So if we can work that out with Gary, the G-Man Gradecki.
If you want to do that, I'm okay with that. Makes no difference to me one way or the other.
Then you're alone on Wednesday, John.
I'm by myself
well,
on
he's
a Wednesday?
You're going to be by yourself one day anyway, right?
What do we normally have on Tuesdays? We have B-Lo comes in the second hour, right?
Oh, okay. Well, then in that case,
and then Wednesdays
we'll just keep
we do
the schedule where
yeah,
it is.
Wednesdays we have Mike.
I don't want to screw up B-Lo's busy schedule of signing autographs and
that's true.
Staring at himself in the mirror
and carrying around Christina's bags and things like that too.
Yeah,
so.
Her school books.
Yeah, exactly.
Carries her books to class.
Oh, this is nice. Okay, I knew that this was going to happen.
What?
All right, Strippers just sent an email. Tech over Texas going down, Johnny.
And it starts.
No, yeah. I'm not saying hot naked burrito.
You know, yeah. By the way, it's really that's just. Probably doesn't
classy.
Need any, yeah, doesn't need any more comment than that. You know, where were you last week, Strippers, when, maybe, Oklahoma State was going to beat Texas? And where were you the week before when Missouri was going to beat Texas?
Get your Texas hat on today and everything. You're all fired up.
Well, number one, I figured I might as well wear it while things are
wear
going
Wear it
well.
While it lasts.
Right, number one. Number two, we've got a big deal going on later this evening, so it's probably going to be rainy and windy out on the field.
That's true, too.
A big corporate thing going on.
Hey, you know something? You missed a great PFW in progress, by the way.
I missed it
yeah,
today?
Yeah, my father bought us lunch
from
Stone Forge.
Oh, nice.
He's a big fan of the show now. I got challenged to a fight.
By whom?
One of our loyal listeners.
Matt in Oregon.
Matt in Oregon wants to take me on in a UFC-style fight.
Matt
because I don't
Oregon.
Like mixed martial arts fighting. I have an affinity toward boxing. I'm a boxing guy.
I agree.
So he wants a good-natured exhibition where only he can't strike me. He can grapple. And I could actually hit him.
Wow.
So this is all. See, you know what they said in Rocky IV that this Apollo Creed Ivan Drago fight was just an exhibition too, and look what happened to Apollo Creed. He died.
That's true. He did.
So I could die too. Plus, I heard Matt's
well,
like 600 pounds.
Yeah. Well, then we definitely.
So now I
want to
get
that.
Like sat on here. That's just not right.
I don't blame you.
Get my ass kicked. But if I get some boxing training in between, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, that's why mixed martial arts are
he's
basically,
trained for like 15 years at this stuff.
That's why they're closing down operations. Elite XC went out of business.
Yeah, and like Matt explained, I agree with Matt on this. Elite XC is like the minor leagues. It's like the XFL of UFC.
Is that right?
It's a joke, yeah. Kimbo Slice out there getting knocked out by a Slurpee
yeah,
vendor
which,
in 38
which, by the way,
seconds.
I thought was just like that.
Yeah, that's bad. But there was a bad UFC fight this weekend as well on pay-per-view where a guy circled the cage for 3 rounds and then his opponent lost when he blew his knee out in the ring. And pretty much had to submit.
Oh
not
God.
A good show for the fans.
No.
John, I'm just a boxing guy.
That's
I'm a purist.
Crazy. Well, I would agree
I'm
with
an
old that.
School boxing guy.
I think
they're better technical fighters. That's just always been my opinion on it.
I did Golden Gloves.
What'd you say, paper champion? I'm going to beat you like a dog.
You were a Golden Gloves fighter?
I did not participate Golden
okay.
Gloves. I was actually in Boys and Girls Club back
nice.
In when I was, I guess I was early teens. I did, like 4 or 5, amateur bouts. I think I went either 3-1 or 4-1. I can't remember. But I called Golden Gloves Boxing in Texas in the 1980s on cable television. And they were always a blast to do.
Anybody noteworthy?
Tony Ayala.
Okay.
His brother Mike Ayala.
Buford.
Yeah. Let's see. Who else? I'm trying to think if there was anybody else. No. Just the Ayala brother. Of course, Tony Ayala was famous because he ended up going to prison.
That's right.
Spending some time there. But, yeah, Mike Ayala was his younger brother. Actually was a pretty good fighter. So, at any rate, that's who I got in, you know, involved with back in the 1980s.
That was our recap of PFW
yes,
in Progress,
PFW
by
Progress,
the way.
Right. Oh, and Stripper says, Lubbock, that's all, buddy. Yeah, well, this is true. The Texas does have to go on the road to play at Texas Tech, and that is a big worry, and I will agree with Strippers that it would not surprise me if Texas went down.
You get nervous with those in-state rivalries, like the team always gets up for the game.
Well, but here's the thing.
And it's like their, Texas, it's like their BCS Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. Texas has dominated Texas Tech. Right. They've dominated Oklahoma State. I mean, my God, they're 20-2 all-time now against Oklahoma State. They hold the series, by the way, Strippers, I'm sure you know this, they hold the series a dominating fashion over OU. You as well, pal. So, you know, hey, Texas is everybody's Super Bowl. I get it. I get it. And you take everybody's best shot. Some years you have a team that can take those shots. Other years you don't. This year, I'm surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised. They have a team that's taking all the shots.
Taking all the shots so
far. But the gauntlet that they're running here, four straight games, four successive weeks against four teams ranked in the top 11 in the nation, has never been done before.
Your Longhorns are facing a similar test to what my Giants will face.
It's true.
Which started on Sunday against the Steelers.
It's, this
now
is
they
true.
Get the Cowboys, they get the Skins, they get the Eagles. All division games this
which
month.
Which is tough. That's tough.
A tough grind.
Of course, the Patriots have a similar schedule like that a little bit later on.
Yeah, with the Jets, Bills, Dolphins.
Yep, right in a row.
All coming up in a row.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that the NFL would schedule it that way for both sides, really not spreading out those
you think
division
that they
games.
Have the, you think they have a plan in mind? Or
I don't know.
Does it just kind of work out that
it
way?
Just, I think with the Patriots, it's more logistic than anything else because of the two West Coast trips, sandwiching those games back-to-back and then having you know that one trip that we already went on earlier this month, and then we have one in December where we're out in Seattle and then we're in Oakland for a week before playing the Raiders.
Right.
So perhaps they really couldn't spread it out because of all – they wanted to lump those West Coast games together.
Right.
And that's 25% of your schedule right there.
Right.
So it'd probably be hard from a travel standpoint logistically to do that. The Giants don't really have any other long trips to go on, so I'm surprised they're all bunched up like that. It's just a weird little scheduling snafu. Little nice light note, lighthearted note about the scheduling.
Did you see, I believe it was late last week, if I'm not mistaken, where Roger Goodell was saying that the scheduling is going to come up for discussion not any sooner than 2010. So I think 2009 is still set the way that we're used to it. But in 2010, there's a very real possibility they will talk about extending the regular season.
Not a big fan of it. I think 16 is fine.
What if they're able to do away with the preseason by adding to the regular season and that additional game is an international game, which they're talking about doing?
That might be a little incentive if you can take away one preseason game because we sure as hell don't need four.
No.
I can tell you that right now. But the same thing, we had a long discussion about this one of the days when you were away and I was sitting in the big chair. And as Bill Belichick said during one of his press conferences, he was asked about this specific topic about shortening the preseason, and he says, when are you going to develop young players? And that's the issue. So when you give time to take these rookies, these first-year players, even some second-year players that don't have a lot of experience, when do you develop those guys? Because now you don't have the games to do it. And it's hard to do it on the practice field. As meaningless as those preseason games are and as boring as they are to us, they do mean something for those young players trying to earn roster spots. So it's hard to get them the time to develop and learn the ropes if you don't have those games. I think a lot of coaches may be against that. Maybe they think four is a pretty good number. Three, maybe you can do. You can't probably do anything less than three.
Part of it, though, was the fact that if they actually did reduce the number of preseason games, they would talk about doing a spring or either like a spring training,
right.
Spring scrimmage, or maybe another scrimmage against another team in advance of training camp to basically gain that opportunity back for the younger players.
Yeah, because I was against that at first when I talked to you last time. I'm a little bit more on board with where you're going with that now because I think, like I always say, logistically, that's my word of the day, but they could work that out in terms of scheduling because they have enough free time where they could squeeze that in there. And it'll probably be a benefit for the players. If it serves no purpose for the team in terms of building chemistry and teaching guys roles, then you really don't need it. But if it serves a purpose, then by all means, if that takes away one of those preseason games in August, that ain't great.
Well, we'll kind of look back on the St. Louis win on Sunday, as we always do here on particularly on Tuesdays. And, of course, for those that are familiar with the program at all, normally we call Tuesday Nitpick Tuesday. So we'll definitely pick through our nits and some of the problems and some of the things that we saw about Sunday's game. Bottom line is it was a 23-16 win over St. Louis, a St. Louis team that is not one of the best teams in the league. At best, they might be middle of the pack. But at the same time, I think we all realize what the Patriots are this year. It's a team that has to continue to develop, and you hope that they can be at least close to the same type of caliber by the end of the year when they need to be that way. So in that regard, you have a team now that's 5-2, and it's the they're 5-2 through seven games for the third straight year, and no other team in the NFL can say that.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself is significant.
You know, it's funny, John. I was thinking about this morning, being 5-2 at this point, and if you went back to the beginning of the season with Tom Brady in the lineup and you looked at the first seven games, you'd probably say, you know what, 5-2 might be okay, because we all thought the Jet game was going to be tough in week two with Brett Favre, and that was his New York debut, and you really didn't know what to expect from the Jets yet, and we always thought the San Diego game would be tough. Now, as it turns out, they lost the San Diego game. Now, you flip-flop the Jets in the Miami game because they obviously got blown up by the Dolphins here. 5-2 is not bad. You probably could have asked for anything more even with Tom Brady through those first seven games, I think, realistically.
I would agree. I would think 5-2 is about where I thought they would be. I thought
the difference, of course, is the problems that have popped up along the way, and you're doing it with a quarterback that does not have a lot of experience. But from Sunday's game, one of the things that I take away from it was probably the best performance by Matt Castle.
Easily.
Now, I know
last week
he had the high rating and he won the Player of the Week award, but I think he was better. He was smarter with the ball, more decisive, and played with more confidence Sunday against St. Louis. Plus, it was his first career fourth quarter comeback, which he had not had a chance to do yet. And in his first attempt to do so, he executed successfully.
Absolutely. I would agree. I thought it was his best all-around performance. He even in the pocket looked like there was a little presence there. He got rid of the football on a couple of occasions. As far as I was concerned, he threw one bad pass on the day, and it was the very first pass he threw on the little out route to Wes Welker when he overthrew him.
Right.
Everything else was pretty much spot on.
Yeah, and the interceptions, I mean,
Wes
Welker fell
fault.
Down. I think Moss should have had the other one.
Yes, he should have.
Moss should have had one in the end zone that he didn't make the catch on either that went through his hands.
So there were at least one, two, three, four drops
Four drops,
count.
I think.
Yes.
I think that's what Eric came up with, because Eric does the post-game count.
Right. Welker had one in an open field run.
Yeah.
And then he fell down on the other pick. And then Moss had two. So, yeah, there are at least four drops right there that he easily could have. And then Falk hit one. One hit him in the pads, where I think he was screened out by the umpire.
Now, also, you mentioned his poise and his presence in the pocket, which I think was the biggest thing that we take from this. Because there have been times this year where he either holds on to it too long or decides, screw it, I'm going to run with it too early.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying, he's got to find some middle ground. You know, find a happy medium here where you don't get rid of it. You know, you don't tuck it too soon. And you don't hold on to it too long. And I think he finally found that on Sunday, where a lot of times, I think he rushed seven times. Not a lot of yards, but he rushed at all the right times. When, hey, look, this play has got nothing, or hey, I've got 10 yards of open field here. I'm going to take off and run.
Right.
I thought he was much wiser in those decisions, and I just think that comes with comfort. I think when you play more, and a lot of quarterbacks talk about this, the game slows down for you. And I think now it's starting to slow down for Castle.
I kind of got that feeling, too, to be honest with you. It just looked like he was much surer on his checkoffs. It looked like he knew where he was going or where he wanted to go. There certainly wasn't happy feet. His running looked like it was designed running, even when he was rolling out of the pocket on some of those occasions.
Now, and I still think with the inexperience, you probably got to get some clunkers along the way here.
Oh, sure.
Okay, it's not to say that this is going to be perfect from here on out. And I don't know how much more he can grow, because we just don't know, bottom line, how good is he really.
Well, what made it even more impressive, I thought, was the fact he did it with, with all due respect to Kevin Falk, he did it without much of a running game. I mean, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis was his running back.
Yeah, and Green Ellis seems to be pretty good up at the line of scrimmage when he can power his way in the end zone. But between the tackles and between the 20-yard lines was not very effective on Sunday. And you're right, they didn't get a lot out of Kevin Falk, more so in the passing game, which really has been his specialty the last couple of years.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think that's his thing. Yeah, that's his deal. So
Those are his running plays.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, the Patriots, I think, if we were to find out that they were going to be without not only Maroney, but out without Lamont Jordan and Sammy Morris for an extended period of time, they'd have to go after back somewhere.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think for now the keys belong to Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, and he'll get that chance. You know, I think we talked about it on the previous show. The Rams didn't rush many defenders.
No, they didn't.
Did not put a lot of pressure on him, and I think that may have been part of the reason why he had such poise in the pocket too. But I give the kid credit for going out there and looking more comfortable than he has all season. And I think regardless of what the numbers tell you and what they told you from last week's Denver game, he was a far better player this past Sunday than he was on Monday night 2 weeks ago. No question about it.
Well, it's certainly encouraging then from a Patriots fan standpoint to see Matt Cassel's growth as the quarterback of this team. Fact remains is that even though it's not perfect, there is some week-to-week improvement in different facets of the game. As you suggested, Mike, a clunker could happen every now and then.
Sure.
Depending on the opponent. Maybe that happens this next week with Indianapolis because we know the Colts. Their backs are to the wall now, baby.
Yeah, this
you know,
is
you got
like
the Colts
the
really.
San Diego game
I was
now.
Kind of halfway rooting for the Colts last night because
right.
You know, with Tennessee coming back to win that game over Indianapolis, Colts are 3-4.
Yeah,
3-4. They are about to be dead and buried in the division.
They are. They're four
they're
back
not
with
already,
nine to go.
Well, yeah,
they're done. They have no shot of winning the AFC South. Now they can still get in as a wild card because the rest of the AFC is terrible.
But how much more can they afford to lose? I mean, frankly,
not much more.
Two more tops.
Yeah, 11-5.
11-5, 10-6 might.
10-6 would be tough to get in.
10-6.
It's going to be a logjam at some point.
I think so.
And they're losing all these games where they may lose a tiebreaker to somebody that they could not beat in week four,
so.
And they're going to be screwed. Now with the Colts, you're right. If they had won last night, maybe this game on Sunday would have been a letdown game of some sort.
Well, that's
where,
what I was thinking.
You know, they had that hangover from beating the undefeated team.
That's exactly what I said.
Now they don't have it. But, hey, but it could work against them too, John. And I'm talking about the Patriots because just like the San Diego game where they needed that game, mm-hmm. the Colts need this one too. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out, what their approach is mentally, and if they're flying to the ball early and that crowd gets into it, which we haven't really seen that crowd yet because we haven't played in that stadium.
Right.
But that could be a long day if the Colts get off to one of those quick starts like the Chargers did. I just don't see it. And, it's funny. I changed my pick before the Charger game. I saw the Chargers against Miami, and I'm like, God, these guys stink. No way. I took New England. They got beat by 20.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sticking with my guns on this one. I'm still taking New England because I don't believe in Indianapolis. I think they're just having one of those off years. So it could come back to bite me again, and I would not be shocked. Is my point. I wouldn't be surprised, but I still think New England wins this game. I think right now they're a better football team. I don't think you can argue that. They're 3-4 versus 5-2.
I think there may be a little bit better football team, but I'm just wondering, you know, again, we still have to see the Patriots do it on the road against a quality opponent. And this would be, I mean, you still have to consider the Colts, I think, a quality opponent.
Yeah, I mean, they have quality players. But they're not playing like the quality team we've come to know.
Now,
but they still have Peyton Manning and all those guys.
You know, the Patriots do as good a job as anybody, and it's been well documented of them focusing on week to week. But, you know, frankly, 2 weeks away, you've got Buffalo for the first time. And so, you know, you kind of hope that at least you're in a position to be able to play Buffalo for the outright lead in the division. And so maybe that's a kind of a carrot on the stick thing for this week. I don't know, but I happen to think that the Colts will probably have, with their backs to the wall, they'll have the hair on the back of their neck standing up this weekend, and they will be pumped and jacked, to borrow my favorite Pete Carroll phrase, and be ready to play. And I think it will be difficult for the Patriots this week. It doesn't mean it's undoable,
right.
Because I think that they did learn something, at least you hope that they learned something in the San Diego debacle, that you'd better come ready to play, and they've developed a little bit further, and if they get one or two of the running backs back this week, I think it bodes well for New England. There are still some problems, and I still expect Peyton Manning to test, you know, the Patriots secondary and to go deep. And frankly, do we even know that we have enough bodies yet to play in the secondary?
Yeah, who's going to be back there now? Because we don't know what the status is of Lewis Sanders, and you assume Ellis Hobbs is okay.
We assume, but
we
don't
know. And so there aren't a lot of healthy bodies back there. And I think the other thing, like you mentioned about the running backs, you got to get one of those guys back, and maybe Lamont Jordan comes back this week. We thought he was making some progress. Now I'm not so sure he is, because I would be shocked if Tony Dungy doesn't blitz a whole lot more than Jim Haslett did on Sunday.
I
think they will try to send the dogs, and you need to be able to run the football to offset that at times.
I agree.
And if they can't do that, it's going to be hard. And it's going to be hard to do that without Morris and Jordan at the same time.
I totally agree. I think you send the dogs, and there's just no. I think that the Patriots ought to prepare for, you know, that kind of an attack in terms of maybe getting it out quickly, trying to run up against it, going up the middle, whatever it may take. But they're going to send it. They're going to send it.
And we don't know from the Colts standpoint how their players are healing because they hope Bob Sanders is back.
Was this week the target week for him?
Well, last week was, too, but that did not happen, obviously. Now, so this week, I think, is part of the target. I think there's been no assumption. I think they just hope that he can play on Sunday. And Joseph Addai as well, who they clearly missed because Dominic Rhodes stinks.
Yeah.
He cannot run the football, and they're having a hard time, and Peyton Manning isn't getting a lot of time back there. Protection wasn't bad last night, but they're just not moving the ball, John.
No.
They're just
no.
not moving
Very
the ball.
Very inconsistent.
It's not the same magic that we're used to seeing.
I don't think it's the same Manning, to be quite honest with you. I think, you know, the knee problems that he's had to battle through, I think it's cost him some time and cost him some timing as well because he's just off, especially when it comes to Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, and Harrison's a guy who seems like he retired about 3 years ago, by the way. I mean, he
Harrison's got those off-field distractions going on for him.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and his head's just not in the game.
No, not right now.
But did you watch last night?
Yeah, I watched about half of it. Yeah.
I mean, they had two fourth-down plays, could not convert, which really could have changed the game. And you look at what Tennessee did after coming back to tie that football game to force those two turnover on downs. They got an interception. I mean, that's a championship-caliber defense stepping up in the fourth quarter of a game when you need to. And they were down. It looked like they were buried at some point, but they kept coming back. And they ran the ball so well
I was impressed.
On Indianapolis. And that's why you really want to get a guy like a Sammy Morris back this weekend.
Because
you look at that defense and think, hey, we could do that too.
Sure you could.
Because we've got the blockers, and we've got the backs, and we've got the ability to balance things off. You look how good Kerry Collins was when he had some semblance of a running game.
That's right.
Now, it wasn't 200-plus yards like we've seen from Tennessee, but it was enough. It was enough to keep Collins comfortable and keep him clean, and that was the important thing. And he's playing good football. I got to give him credit. You know, I'm a Kerry Collins guy. Going back to the Giants in 2000 when he took him to the Super Bowl.
When I think of Kerry Collins, I think of his, you know,
liquor problem.
Well, no, not necessarily that.
Being a
drunk? Just think of his time in Oakland. You know, when he just you know he couldn't even handle the football. Much less
that. Well, a lot of guys have not done well there. No. Randy Moss being one of them.
Yeah, it's also
hard.
True.
It's hard to hold that against guys. Hey, Lamont Jordan didn't have a fun stay in Oakland either.
No, he did not. It wasn't very productive.
He was enjoying himself till he got injured here.
Right, right.
But the point being, Oakland is literally a black hole.
It has been
not
for
just
a
because they all wear black, but
it's
a black hole
for a lot
NFL
of players.
Talent.
That's exactly right. All right, so let's kind of look back a little bit more at the Patriots and Rams. Obviously, we've already kind of turned the page a little bit. It's a Sunday night game, of course, at the new what do they call it? Something oil
Lucas Oil Field,
right? Okay, Lucas Oil Field. They get the national TV cameras on them again. The NBC, of course, took the week off because I guess the World Series. I'm assuming.
No Sunday night game because of the World Series.
So NBC will come back with the Patriots and the Colts for this next week. And so you'll have all day Sunday to watch the football, and then you have the Patriots and the Colts Sunday night all to themselves. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. My guess would be it's a little better for the Patriots than the Colts because the Colts now are the ones that are, you know, they're coming home, but they're coming home on a short work week.
You know, it's funny. Go back to last year when these two teams played in the marquee matchup we were all talking about, two undefeated teams this late in the season.
They were both 7-0, weren't they, last year?
Now you got 5-2, which is okay,
right.
But 3-4 on the other end in a brand new stadium. A lot has changed in a year. I like these night games. These are fun. I always say, too, and I kind of joke with the guys, I like night games here because the food's better upstairs.
Well, of course, we all know that's very important.
That's all that's important to me is just eating food. Not like Paul Perillo eating food, but I like my free food, too, as well.
A couple of boxes of donuts in here today.
Yeah. You missed the another thing about PFW in progress, and I feel so bad that I didn't mention this, but our UK fan club showed up today.
Really?
James Cuff from Wales, who is the creator of PFWinProgress.com,
nice.
Brought some of his friends along. They came here. They were about 15 to 20 strong on Sunday.
Wow.
Tailgating the whole nine yards, and they brought us donuts today, and they sat in on the show, got some pictures with the guys, went down to meet them at halftime, or actually before the game on Sunday, so that was another part. And I know, you know, we have two boxes here. I'm sure you can clean this up, John.
Yeah, thanks. Just what I need.
No one, did anybody eat these? It's like two.
I had one
before
the show started.
I'm assuming this bottom box is empty.
I don't know. Is it? Pick it up. Shake it.
No, it feels heavy.
Get out. They didn't eat those donuts?
Yeah, only five donuts have been eaten. I thought Andy ate four on his own.
I think he did.
Well, here comes...
Here comes two gender. Oh, we know he'll eat.
He'll eat the donuts.
He's watching his girlish figure. But the girlish part, right?
All right. So the Patriots ended up winning 23-16. And if you have your nitpick for Tuesday based on Sunday's play, then now is the time to fire it off. Web radio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number.
You got a nitpick? I got a nit.
I definitely have a nitpick, but I was going to suggest at least before I nitpick.
Let's not get negative yet.
Well, I just think I'm sure you guys talked about this a little bit, but I would be remiss if we did not mention the first penalty-free game in franchise history, which is significant. I mean, you always strive for no penalties or to limit the number of penalties and mistakes. I'm not sure that I've ever seen a penalty-free game by one team, to be honest with you, much less been a part of one like the Patriots were on Sunday.
Well, to clear it up, there were no accepted penalties because Matt Leight did get called for holding. But it was declined because there was a sack on the play and the yardage was greater. Okay. So they did not take that penalty. But I think the big thing is, John, because I think in any game, there are so many plays, you're going to commit penalties somewhere. The question is, are you getting caught committing the penalties, number one? And number two, are you committing the obvious ones? So to the Patriots' credit, no offsides or defensive infractions or false starts, because those are the obvious ones, because the judges always have their eyes on the line of scrimmage. So you tend to see those more often. If you have, like, a scramble on special teams and some guy gets blocked in the back, you don't always see that called. Sometimes you can miss that because it happens behind a play. But right before the snap, a lot of those penalties, those, I think, are the silly penalties, quote-unquote, that Bill Belichick was talking about yesterday. Not making the stupid, obvious ones. And that's the big thing from Sunday. They did not commit any of those obvious penalties that are going to get called every time. Holding, specifically, would be one of them as well that I didn't mention the first time around. So to their credit, that's a great thing. And when the opposing team commits nine, a lot on special teams as well. That's how you get that battle for field position. That was so huge on Sunday, John. Donnie Jones shanks a punt, and it goes to the 48-yard line. The field position battle swung greatly in the fourth quarter, and a lot of it was special team play, penalties included. And with the Patriots not committing any, they never put themselves on a long field where, you know, we have a kickoff return and it gets called back for holding. Now we're starting at our 10-yard line. And that happened to the Rams once on a big drive. And those small things add up, and they make a big difference in the game.
We also mentioned earlier that, of course, Matt Cassel had his first career fourth quarter comeback. Randy Moss, his 800th career reception, which made him the fifth fastest to get to 800 career receptions in NFL history. I thought that was fairly significant. He did have a 100-yard game, although it probably could have been a 200-yard game if you count the ones that he dropped in there. Wes Welker, six or more passes that he's caught for a seventh straight game. He's just the fourth player in NFL history to do that, which I find remarkable. Isn't that that's just bizarre.
It's an obscure stat. Like, why seven games? Like, who counts that? And is it really irrelevant?
Six or more passes over a seven-game streak. I mean, that's obviously you're talking about a possession receiver and then some, but only four players have ever done that.
That. The thing is, this year is, you know, everybody's trying to take Moss out of the game, so Welker's open underneath all day.
Very true.
He's not getting a ton of yards on those plays. He's not breaking free, but he's getting the ball. I mean, you can't take that away from him. But yeah, not a lot of big plays from Welker this year. Or the big touchdowns like we saw last year. They just haven't opened that part of the game up yet completely.
No, not yet.
They're starting to, I think. But, again, it's not quite there yet. Welker, like you said, has become a possession receiver. The slot guy underneath, catch the ball, fall, go down for 6 or 7 yards. And I think those add up. I do. When you run the ball well enough and you have your guys back out there healthy, and maybe those plays are a little more relevant, I think.
Mike, you see that in a lot of spread offenses, especially in the college game.
That's true.
You know, most of, you know, like a run, a 6 or 7 yard pass is very acceptable.
Yes.
And it's usually a slot receiver or a tight end, or in some cases it's both. You know, they're crossing over the middle, and you get 4 or 5 yards, and it's just as good as a run.
Well, how many times have we seen that screenplay this year where he drops back, boom, quick screen out to the receiver on the side, and he tries to carve his way up the middle for 7 or 8 yards. That's been such a big part of the offense this year.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I thought that was going to be a big part of the offense even with Brady. See, my projection this year was thinking, you know, everybody's going to try to take away the deep stuff. They may start going back to the dink and dunk to some degree, a lot of screens, a lot of checkoffs. But we're seeing it now because it's a different quarterback. So the circumstances are different, but we are getting
still
that kind of
what
offense.
You thought you might
it's
see,
just
right?
kind of ironic.
Yeah, the slip screens, I think, are what are really becoming popular now. And the idea here is to make sure that you can create the personnel mismatches on those where you have the better blocking downfield and allow the receiver to do his job. And you know, make yak. That's what we all want.
Yak.
Yak.
Yards after the catch.
Yards after the catch. That's exactly what we
You know why it works here? Because you have the offensive line. You have an athletic line. Not a big oversized line like some teams have. But you have athletic guys who are good run blockers, pretty good in pass protection. But the biggest thing is on those screens, they can get down the field and throw a couple of blocks. Mm-hmm. And you need that to spring guys loose. Unless you have a Hines Ward who's, you know, the best blocking receiver that I've seen in quite some time. If you have a guy like that, or even like David Givens when he was here. But when you have those linemen that can do it and get down the field quickly, that's why those screens are so effective. They have the personnel to run that kind of offense. And I like the kind of call in the red zone, too. We saw it with Moss against Denver, and he kept begging them, hey, give me a shot here. And he kind of joked that they said, no, no, we don't want you running that one, old man, you know. Just run down the field deep and look pretty, you know. But not pretty, I guess. But that play worked to perfection, and it's kind of a gutsy call, but you kind of like to see that now and then because so many times in the red zone, all you see is run, fade pass. Run, fade pass. And it doesn't work. It doesn't always work. And I kind of like spicing things up now and then. So if that slip screen becomes a part of their game in the red zone inside the 20,
whatever
works, because the last 2 weeks, the red zone offense marginally better now than it was at the beginning of the year.
You can see that they're starting to get a clue, and at least the execution seems to be a little bit better.
And a lot of that is Castle's poise, too, because he made a lot of bad plays in the red zone early on.
I mean, the red zone, as far as I'm concerned, is basically on the quarterback because the linemen know what's coming. The defense has a shorter field in which to work, so they can obviously take more gambles and realize that they've got more opportunity to be successful just because the field is shorter. It's all on the quarterback and his decision-making process in the red zone, knowing where to go and who you can check off to if your primary and your secondary and even your tertiary receivers are not open and available. You have to have somebody that can make that split-second decision. So I think that's where we're seeing some real improvement with Matt. He's learning it. It's just taking time. That's all it is.
But you don't play for 8 years.
Now you're
having on-the-job training.
It's significant.
It's a big deal. And I think one of the big things, like you said in those checkoffs, you know somebody's going to be covered somewhere because the space is a lot tighter.
Sure.
So when you roll out to your right or you roll out to your left and you've got two guys in the flat, a guy in the end zone, and they're covered, you got to be able to look behind you and check the guy in the backside.
You know, it's also incumbent upon
him. He hasn't done that a lot, but I think he's starting to get it now.
It's also incumbent upon him to talk to his receivers when they get back into the huddle. Like, hey, were you open on that play?
Right.
You know, because then you file it away for later in the game when that same call comes up, you know, or you talk to the running backs and say, hey, were you loose out of the backfield because I'm looking the other direction, what have you. I mean, the communication has got to be constant and continuous. And, I know that a guy like Randy Moss has probably come back in the huddle and said, yeah, yo, I'm open, you know, that kind of thing.
Get me the ball.
Exactly. And so you take a look at it if he's there. But as long as you have the communication going, then you can at least file it away and realize that, you know what, that might be open this next time, so after my initial checkoff, maybe I'll look over that direction and see if I can find myself a receiver. The two other things that I was going to point out was the Rams, it was their first ever visit to Gillette Stadium, and obviously the Patriots won the game, so they're now 24-4 against first-time visitors to the stadium.
That's right.
There are only Arizona, Atlanta, and Carolina who have never physically played in this building, and of course Arizona will come a little bit later on.
So. Right, and the last two are coming next year.
Yes, next year.
Finally,
they'll cycle back in next year with the AFC, NFC South, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the division and the crossover.
So does that mean we get to go to New Orleans next year?
I think that's how it would stand, yes.
Hey. Mardi Gras?
Atlanta and Carolina will be here, and then you go to New Orleans and Tampa, right? Are they NFC South?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so there you go.
I only have a couple more stadiums left on my tour.
Really?
That I haven't been to, yeah.
Raymond James I've been to twice already this year for college.
That's right.
So.
See, I was there for the
preseason. But it's actually
not bad. So I guess that counts. That counts, right?
Sure, it counts. Do
I have to be there for a regular season game to count it?
No.
Okay. I haven't been to Baltimore yet. Baltimore and Dallas.
Been to Baltimore.
I missed out last year because I got
screwed. You've never been to Texas Stadium. You better hurry, pal.
Oh, that's right. You know what? It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. No, you'll end up going to the new one. You'll end up going to the new one.
No.
See, you're going to miss Texas Stadium. What can I tell you? The other thing is the Patriots have now won 13 straight against the NFC.
Hey, now.
I don't know
if including the Super Bowl?
Not including the Super Bowl. But, you know, 13 regular season games in a row against the NFC. So.
I had to do that.
That include the Super Bowl.
I know.
Yeah, Wise
smartass.
That's exactly right. Webradio at patriots.com. That's the email address. All right, let's come forward with your nitpicks. Mike's got his.
Yes.
I've got mine. I want you to share yours. Wherever you see this team needs to work, wherever you see this team needs to improve, something you don't like about the Patriots that you've wondered, how come they can't do this or how come they can't fix that? We're going to nitpick. It's what we do. We make a big habit of it on Tuesdays. Hard to nitpick with a win overall when you improve to 5-2. And, of course, you move to the top of the division. You share it now, the division lead in the AFC East with the Buffalo Bills. But, hey, that's what we do. We're here to kind of, you know, dissect and analyze it. So we'll get to the nitpicks. Coming up, we'll take a break here, and we get your emails. Phone calls at 508-543-7482. Welcome as well. Inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Super League championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to RevolutionSoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Dylan Long inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday. Michael Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly is with us here on a Tuesday because, frankly, he needed something to do today.
Pretty much. Sorry, but if I don't hear any of Gary's little quips, it's because I don't have my headphones on completely because the sound on these is just awful. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Can you adjust the volume?
Yeah, you feel like Bill O'Reilly on that audio clip. We'll do it live!
They're barely on your ears.
Because the sound of my voice in these headphones is really bothering me. It sounds like I'm talking underwater.
Sounds like
I feel more clear and coherent outside the headphones. So okay. I'm just going to do it like this. Is that cool?
Okay.
Let's do it live.
Whatever.
Do it live. We'll do it live.
Let's get to some emails. Again, webradio@patriots.com. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today, formerly Patriots Video News.
Oh, is he coming down today?
He's supposed to be here in the second hour of the program.
We'll have some fun,
as he normally does on Tuesdays.
I'm going to be all over Brian
Lowe.
Now, does
this mean you won't be with us tomorrow? Or are you still okay for Wednesday?
I could probably swing an hour. I don't do any running, obviously. I don't do any work here.
Well, you know what? It'd be great to be hired as a full-time radio guy, don't you think?
Bet your ass it would. I mean, I like to write, but I'd rather talk than write.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying here. I mean, the job does have some perks here.
No transcribing when you're doing radio.
There you go. So you're learning. You're absolutely learning. I got to read this email because this is actually pretty good here. It says,
is this from Amy? Hot Amy?
No, this one's not from Amy, although she sent you a picture.
I don't know if it was directed for me.
No, it says pick from Mike.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You asked for it.
Hello, it says pick from Mike. All right, we'll start with Amy since you brought it up. All right, here it is. There's no, it just says pick for Mike.
I don't need text, baby, just photos.
That's right. Okay, so here it is. Did I show
it to
you?
I think this is the one you show me, right?
Is it the same one? Yeah,
okay,
this
turn
is the
this
same
around.
One. Okay, there it is. There you go. What do you think?
It's a quality pick.
It's a quality pick.
It's a good, like, MySpace kind of pick. I'm just worried about MySpace angle. You ever heard the theory on MySpace angles?
Amy, I'm kind of wondering.
She's hot, too.
Yeah, it's a good picture. But
no, it is.
I would say, you know, whoever took the picture was halfway slosh because the dong thing
is tilted.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm like.
It's all right.
Amy is a
she
nice
was seducing
brunette.
Her lover.
She has a very tight tank top on. She's holding a wine glass in the right hand. It looks like she's got some
very tight,
low-cut jeans.
B right? cups, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not going to get into that.
No, it's a wine glass.
It is a wine glass, so, yeah.
Not
yeah.
a B cup.
Because I was asking
glass.
About her age, but she's drinking wine, so I have to assume she's of age.
You have to assume she's of age. That's correct.
Okay.
All right, so there you go. So she showed you a picture. All right, now here's another one. This is from Joshua. Joshua.
He sent a pic too?
No, he didn't send a pic.
For Eric.
God, you guys.
I'm in the Indy Hart chair. What
you
do you want?
Yeah, get out of his
I
chair.
I'd be an amateur
buffoon
for 2 hours.
I know, exactly. All right, Joshua says, to whom it may concern, my name is Joshua, and I won't give your last name, Josh.
Thank you. He says, Fred would have read that already.
Yeah, I'm 26 years old. I've grown up in Fresno, California my whole life. I'm a very passionate sports fan. It is literally my life.
Nice.
I love sports radio. I listen to sports radio every single day. FYI, I'm a huge Patriots fan. I haven't missed one Patriots game in the past 11 years. My question to you is, my dream job is to be a sports talk radio host. I have talked to a few DJs and asked them how they got started in the business, as the usual response is, just find ways to get on the air. I'm not asking to be put on air. I'm just wondering if you could let me work for you doing something around the radio station. I'm willing to start at the very bottom and work or earn my way up the ladder. I will work my butt off for you and the station. Whatever is asked of me, count me in.
Two-gender.
I was just going to say, he wants to be Dan Two-Gender.
We have Dan Two-Gender here. I just want a chance to get my foot in the door. I'm completely willing to move to Massachusetts to pursue my dream. You would be giving me a great opportunity and the chance of a lifetime, and I would be forever grateful. I promise to you that I would not regret it. Or that you would not regret it. Now, I'm sure he wouldn't. I'm a very, very hard worker, and if people that could vouch for that, this would be a dream job for me. I do, however, completely understand if you are unable to give me a position. No hard feelings, but best of luck to everyone there at the station.
Seeing as we do not have the authority to hire.
Yes.
Well, I got to ask you, John, because the print guys like myself kind of have the same entry into this business where we're doing a lot of grunt work at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of friends of mine were in radio and always started out producing and doing like the overnight shows. Like,
right.
Putting on the ESPN radio feed at midnight at 790 The Score, which I'm sure you know all about.
Sure.
And for us, you know, it's covering high schools and taking phone calls and working the desk. So everybody's going to start from the bottom. It's not easy.
Generally,
seems like radio is getting pretty difficult to crack into because nobody leaves their jobs.
Well, a lot of people don't leave the job, number one. Number two, jobs don't turn over as much now as they did even a few years ago because the sports radio market or sports radio industry has – pretty much infiltrated the marketplace. I mean, right now, you've got well over 700, 800 stations that consider themselves all sports, even if they're, right. you know, they have a news show or they do this or they carry Rush Limbaugh or they do a, you know, IMUS in the morning type syndicated thing, you know, in the morning. They consider themselves all sports radio. There's probably thousands of radio stations that carry a significant amount of sports programming and maybe even do some sports talk programming within. Suffice to say, Joshua, the best advice I could give you is exactly what Mike Parenti said. Be willing to do anything, but it's probably best that you start somewhere close to where you're from, which would be Fresno, California. You should, if you're 26 years old, my guess is you're already, you know, done with school.
Right.
So a lot of stations look for interns, and if you're of school age, that's your foot in the door is to, you know, work an internship at a station. If you're too old or you're out of school, you should probably look into, you know, broadcasting schools. You know, they have Connecticut School of Broadcasting here in the Northeast, in particular, where you can go and you can take courses to learn how to produce, to learn how to run a board, and to learn how to be on the air. If you do that and come out with basically the equivalent of an associate's degree, you can be hired. Read Pete Shepard from WEEI into that mix because he's a CSB graduate.
Good news out of Orlando, Florida. Dale Earnhardt died.
Good news out of Orlando, Florida.
One more time.
I'd forgotten about
that. Good news
that.
Out of Orlando, Florida. Dale Earnhardt died. It'll be John Halama on the mound against El Duque.
Oh, I love it.
Good news out of Florida. Oh, yeah.
There you go. There's your standard.
To got any more?
Aspire to be. It seems like it's hard, like you said, to stay close to home. Because it's really difficult to relocate for a job that's not going to pay a lot of money.
Yeah, if you're gonna relocate, you got to find something to do. But, yeah. I mean, here, Joshua, let me give you an example. Contribute to this show or contribute to PFW in progress.
Call us
Pick up the phone and call in. And if you become – this way you can work on what I consider your on-air skills to be. You have to make, you know, clear, concise statements. You have to do your homework. You got to ask smart questions. You have to be able to come back with some feedback and or some analysis. Do your homework before you come on if you have a question you're going to ask, and be willing to banter back and forth with those who are on the air. If you become known as a good caller, either to this program or to PFW or to the callers or to the hosts in your local market in Fresno, California, then whenever you call, the producers who will answer the phone will put you right on. And
if you're at EI, you'll get a job.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Some radio stations are so enamored with their callers, they have offered them jobs to host their own shows. It has happened. It happened at the Ticket in Dallas-Fort Worth. It happened at, obviously, 1510, the Ticket in Boston.
JT, you know, the Brick.
JT the Brick was a Jim Rome contest winner.
He
was a Jim Rome. Yes, exactly.
The smack-off. So
work on your skills. Work on your skills as a phone caller, as a phone guest, as a call-in person, and then you can take that and kind of move on with it. How's that for advice? Does that work?
Sports radio.
Exactly.
John Rook. Yeah. John Rook's advice. Quit your job and call the sports talk station.
Here's John from his mother's basement. I
would rather slam dance butt naked with a porcupine than go through that again.
There you go. That's exactly right.
Slam dance butt naked.
As we wap, let's try that again, shall we? It's very good. Got any more?
Yeah, he does.
Of course he does. So anyway, there's our advice to you, Joshua. This one comes from Locke, who says, guys, I want to get your thoughts on the game this week. To me, it seemed that it was a good win in some difficult situations, and the Pats were still able to grind out a win with some good offense and defense when needed. Seems that Matt Cassel is starting to look more comfortable, and like Andy has said, starting to make the quicker reads and not hold onto the ball as long. We also mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
We'll give ourselves some props there. It would be nice to have either Sammy Morris or Lamont Jordan or both of them back this week, though Kevin Falk seems to be aging like Fred. Wow.
Ooh.
And could carry the load
if
needed. Andy
Hart says he has diminishing skills, then he called him the ageless wonder.
Yeah. Which way does he go with that?
He turned the tide.
Yeah, I thought so.
But now that he's good again, he's the ageless veteran.
Yeah, right.
When he starts to suck, he's got diminishing skills.
Come on. Pick a side of the fence and stay on it, you know?
Andy Hart's sitting on the fence.
I know. Do you think that the front seven is now playing A, below par, B, okay, C, good, or D, excellent, and are they carrying the team?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say C, good, the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Paul didn't really think they had a lot of pressure in the Denver game. I thought they had better pressure. My argument was that it was obviously better than it was against San Diego, but it's hard to be worse because they never even touched Phillip Rivers. Now, against Cutler, they were clearly in his face more. I mean, the first play of the game, he whacked his hand on somebody's helmet. That would require a defender being there in his face. So right away, there was more pressure in that game. But clearly on Sunday, a much more concerted effort to get after Mark Bulger and to force him to make some awkward throws. And I thought Seymour had a great game, probably his best game, definitely his best game of the year. And you finally started to see the pass rush that we thought we'd see that can take some heat off the secondary. But what we've also learned is there's not enough of a pass rush to take all the heat off the secondary
Never.
At this point, because there are too many bodies out there who are missing
right.
and guys who are out of position not making plays. But you can win if you can rush the passer, even with some limited personnel back there. And they finally gave us the effort that we've been waiting for on Sunday. And you hope for the Patriots that it's a sign of things to come. I think a lot of it, and we talked about it on the last show, was Belichick's Reggie White comment during the week, where we asked about defensive rotations and why guys like Seymour, Wilfork, and Warren only played half the snaps against Denver. And this was statistically proven. About 30 snaps apiece out of 60 total snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of it, you come off on third down, I understand that, and the game was a blowout, so some younger guys got playing time. But they were rotating from the start in that game. And a lot of times you see a guy like a Wilfork who comes off on third down, Mike Wright comes in, or Lakeven Smith comes in. And we asked Bill about that. You know, you're trying to keep guys fresh. You kind of gave him a way to answer it and get an out for himself. And he says, no. He says, if you have Reggie White, you play him. In other words, we don't have a Reggie White.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every guy in defense could say, oh, is he talking about me there? Like, who's he talking about? I think part of it may have been a shot at Richard Seymour, who is supposed to be the all-pro, Pro Bowl, respected defensive end pass rushing specialist.
He hasn't been that player in
a couple of years on a consistent basis. But now on Sunday we saw a monster game. You wonder, he's a sensitive guy. Nothing wrong with that, but he wears his heart on his sleeve. And a lot of times that's a good thing. I think he responded to that. I think a lot of guys responded to it as well.
Also,
it doesn't apply to everybody though, because
right.
just keep in mind, Adalis Thomas has played every snap for about six games in a row.
Yes, he has.
So he's clearly the Reggie White of this defense because he's always out there.
That's true.
But not everybody else is.
Says here, is the secondary going to struggle over the rest of the season, and can you predict if Peyton is going to throw 400 yards on us this weekend? I don't think Peyton will throw for 400,
no,
but yes, the secondary
playing.
Is going to struggle.
Absolutely. I think until some guys get back healthy, and even if they do, who do you really have out there? You're not getting Harrison back. He's done for the year.
No.
What you need to see is a more maturation process from a guy like a Jonathan Wilhite, excuse me, covering receivers in the slot. I thought he struggled a lot at times on Sunday. Terrence Wheatley needs to get whatever he needs to get and get it quickly, because he is not even playing over Wilhite right now. Wheatley did not get on the field until Hobbs went down in the first half,
mm-hmm.
and then he came back in the second half when Hobbs went out again when he hurt his shoulder. I mean, he's that far down in the depth chart for a guy that we all thought could be a starter coming out of camp. It
right.
says a lot of
yeah.
what kind of
yeah.
precipitous drop he has suffered from the beginning of spring camp till the end of training camp. It's really kind of mm-hmm. scary when you think about it.
I have to tell you that I don't mind, believe it or not, and maybe this is a little strange, I don't mind seeing Brandon Merriweather come up and play the corner.
No, I mean, he obviously did it in college.
Sure.
He has that versatility. You kind of wonder if they're just trying not to put too much on his plate right now, because he's being asked to fill in
to do a lot.
On a more consistent basis for a guy like Harrison. Now, he was playing a lot already, but clearly now this was the first time he'd ever taken every snap in the game. So obviously that workload is increasing. So what we talked about in the previous show last week was how with Harrison out for the year and Merriweather and Sanders in the lineup now as starters, they may be more adept at their specific roles. Maybe now you can put Sanders close to the line and you can play Merriweather deep, and they can find their niche. But they both struggled at times on Sunday. You know, there were a couple of times where Sanders just misplays up close, and there were a couple of times where Merriweather was not getting given the help deep over the top.
Who was it that Hobbs collided with on
that
the long
That was Sanders.
Window? Was it Sanders? Okay, that's what I thought.
He got there late,
yeah.
and instead of taking out the guy with the ball, he took out his own teammate.
Right.
I mean, that was like watching Bubba Crosby and Gary Sheffield collide in the outfield against the Angels in the playoffs.
Keystone Cops kind of.
Yeah,
stuff,
I mean, it's you know? Like, you know, the Benny Hill show. You got to
yeah.
cue up the music, you know. I mean, it wasn't good. And they need less of that. And I think you're going to keep seeing it until they get more time together on the field.
Right.
This is obviously a work in progress, and it's going to be a work in progress all year.
Yes, exactly. That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Also, the Pats were to sign a free agent at this point of the year, what would they have to pay him in terms of salary, and how long would he have to be contracted?
I mean, if the guy's a free agent, you can just give him the veteran minimum.
Basically the veteran minimum, right?
Yeah.
And don't you prorate it over the number of
right.
games that you have left in the year?
I mean, if you're trading for somebody and you're assuming the guy's contract, that's
what's
one
the,
thing.
What's the veteran minimum, 450?
That's a good question.
I think it's 450.
Wish
pounds.
I knew
the
answers.
That figure sticks in my head. So if you got half a season, you know I'm 2 1/4.
It's not much.
No, not much at all. Do you see that if the secondary continues to struggle with big plays, that the Pats could sign Ty Law for the back end of the season to a 1-year deal or something and help him with a thin core of safeties and not proven corners?
Well, he'd be the one guy that, of all the rumors I've heard, would make sense. But they had the chance, John. They had the chance. They brought in Antoine Spann instead, off the practice squad.
Right.
You know, when the people kept asking us, are they going to bring back John Lynch? They had a chance to bring back John Lynch.
They did.
They don't want John Lynch because he's not any good anymore. And I get the feeling that they don't think Ty Law's going to help either.
Well, I think they would have brought him back if they wanted.
Yes.
I'll put it to you that way. I agree with you on that one. I think you did make that point last week that there's a reason they brought Antoine Spann.
Right.
Simply because they just
they
don't
feel
think
Antoine
that Lynch
Spann
and or Law
or
are the
Spann
answer.
Or yeah. However you pronounce it, yeah. Gives them more than John Lynch.
I was told Spann.
Spann?
So, yeah, that's what I was told. But I guess I could be wrong. I don't know.
That's how irrelevant he is. We can't even say his name. Exactly. We need his name, Spann. Okay.
It is Spann? Okay.
We need it on the board here, like Hochstein.
Yeah, we do. I guess we should know that.
We need a big pronunciation guide.
We'll have to double check.
Get two gender on that.
I think Castle has developed to a point now where I can say that I am as excited to watch every New England game, much like last year's, where I believe there is an expectation that the Pats win every game. Hopefully the roller coaster ride doesn't continue, and instead the Pats just keep rising and rising from the last two games. Their form looks good. Hopefully, Big Matt Castle throws 300 yards and 5 TDs this week against a Colts defense that couldn't stop Kerry Collins making important plays on them. Good email.
The roller coaster is going to continue. This isn't going to turn into last year all of a sudden.
No,
I mean,
you
got to understand that last year was a once-in-a-lifetime thing where you had a pretty good chance they're going to win every time they took the field. Now we don't know anymore, and there are no easy games. And as much as I'd like to say, gee, you know, you can only beat the Rams without Steven Jackson by 7, for this team, with everything it's gone through, you got to cherish all those wins because you don't know how many more you're going to get.
That's, the style points is what really gets me, and I think this is where a lot of the fans are spoiled. And this is one of my nitpicks. It's not the only nitpick.
There we go,
today,
John Rook's nitpick.
But it's one of my nitpicks, and I'm going back to something that I probably said 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the fact that our expectations are just way too high, and I understand why they are, but I think most of the people who listen to us in this programming here on this website, I think they're intelligent fans. They're smart fans. They understand football. They understand the nature of sport, let's say. Certainly understand the nature of the National Football League. For those that don't get it, then I think those are the ones that have the expectations that are through the roof. But this team is not last year's team.
No.
It's not even close to last year's team, and even though you know, I get why people think, well, if they did this, then this should happen. Or if that happened, then this should follow. I understand why you have those expectations. My problem with that is that you don't read in other factors. You hear people say, well, injuries should never be a deciding factor. Well, injuries should never be an excuse, but they are a factor.
Of course they are.
They absolutely are.
Especially
when you can't
use
injury as an excuse, because what that gets back to is your overall depth of the organization. And so then you put it at the feet of the organization. If you got injuries to your starters, great. Why the hell didn't you go out and get some capable backups?
Yeah, right.
You know? So I understand why injuries are not an excuse, but they are an explanation. And it is an explanation for where this team is, where they are. And even last year, you know, as many things as they were able to overcome with the most unbelievable offense that the modern-day National Football League has ever seen, this year, if everybody had stayed healthy, this year, if Brady had been here, it's still not going to measure up to what we saw last year. And so everybody needs to bring their sights down just a notch, and then you got to bring it down just a notch again because you don't have, you know, Tom Brady. And then you got to bring it down a notch again because you don't have Maroney and you don't have Jordan and you don't have Morris. And you got to bring it down a notch again because Randy Moss is now dropping some passes. And you got to bring it down another notch because the offensive line isn't all that it's cracked up to be. And I think Tom Brady helped make that offensive line
what it
was last year. And now they're having to learn to readjust. And I've made this statement several times on this program. This offensive line has to learn to play with Matt Castle.
Yep.
And maybe they're starting to get it now. And a healthy Stephen Neal is certainly going to help the situation, especially when it comes to run blocking. So, you know, it's all coming together slowly, but there's no way you should ever expect this team to be up at the pedestal they were last year. That was almost a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing of what we saw and in terms of remarkability for the entire season. It's the reason that it is the reason that even though this team didn't win a Super Bowl, there's still a banner out there that marks the 16-0 regular season. That's how unbelievably rare and difficult what they did last year means to the people within this organization, Mike. And so in that regard, my biggest nitpick for almost the entire stinking year is the sights are too high.
Yeah.
The hopes and the wishes are too high. Bring it down a notch. Put this team on an even keel with everybody else, and then let's throw them out there and see how they perform.
No, I agree. You can't expect back-to-back 16-0. It's probably never going to happen again unless the Titans do it. And if they do it, then it kind of cheapens the value of 16-0. To be honest, if it happens in 2 years consecutive, then we have an issue. But I agree with your point. I wanted to get back to your point on Tom Brady helping to make this line better. And I think at times he does because he knows when to step up in the pocket or when to escape the rush. And a lot of times he can deal with a bad pass block or poor protection, whereas Matt Castle kind of needs to be a little bit more perfect and a little more precise for him to operate. And that's the biggest adjustment for this line is, yeah, you may need to hold that block 1 second longer or 2 seconds longer than you did with Tom Brady back there. That's a big change for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And as Castle grows and learns how to step up in the pocket and avoid those plays, you know, then maybe it kind of starts to level off where one guy goes up, the other guys come down, and you start to meet somewhere in the middle. That's the ideal situation, I think, that you could hope for going forward.
Matt from Connecticut writes, I was very impressed with the team this week. The defense was able to get very big stops, and I thought Castle looked great. However, we do need to make a big change in the secondary if we hope to compete with the better teams. I think that's going to be the overwhelming nitpick.
Oh, the secondary?
Is the secondary.
Yeah, people are going to be bitching about that all year because they're going to keep giving up plays from time to time, and in a close game, those plays could really mean the difference in the final outcome. And if you get into a game like next week at Indianapolis where it's tied in the fourth and Manning gets a 60-yard bomb to Reggie Wayne, you're in some trouble.
Right.
You can't. DMP said it 2 weeks ago. You cannot have big – nobody can survive big plays.
Kay Brooks writes –
how good you are.
Kay Brooks writes, one thing you're forgetting about this win in regards to the defense, it was against the Rams. They suck. Do that next week against a decent team.
What, the 3-4 team?
I suppose, yeah. A decent 3-4 team, though.
Yeah, and they haven't even played right.
Yeah,
and they haven't played that well at times either.
No, they haven't. But again, it's perception, right? It's all perception. You know, frankly, the Rams were not as bad.
The Rams came in.
The Rams were not as bad as the 0-4 team they started out to be because they had quit on Scott Linehan. We discussed this last week. They had quit on him. They clearly needed a change in direction. It was the right move made by the ownership of the Rams, Georgia Frontieri's son, I guess, who's running the team now. And Jim Haslett was the right call because he came in and basically kicked some ass, and he has them very competitive now.
And he took names later.
He did. And frankly, I think it's great. I think that he's got a good chance to keep the job now.
He might, you know. This is a really good audition for him.
It's a great audition for him.
He wins his first two games. And they come back in Washington. They blow out Dallas. And they come here and they take it to the fourth quarter.
Take you right to the end against the Patriots. Yeah, sure.
That's not too bad.
That's a pretty good start. In fact, I'd say that's a very good start. Tony in Greenwich, Connecticut. Has Mike Vrabel gotten old in a hurry? He has yet to come close to sacking the quarterback. Why isn't Pierre Woods not seeing more action? His speed on the edge may be useful. The success or failure and or failure of this team is all predicated on the pass rush. If they can get a steady rush, they'll be right there for a playoff spot. If they can't harass the quarterback, they will be scored on at will. So I want to see more Woods or Guyton. The speed they provide is vital to this defense.
Well, I agree that Vrabel's been a little bit quiet this year, and we talked about that in the previous show. Where was he on Sunday? With all this pressure.
I didn't see anything.
No, he really did not produce much of anything and was not a big factor. Now, I don't know if Pierre Woods is the answer. He's going to get about 10, 15 at best snaps per game as a speed rusher on third down, and that's fine. Any more than that is probably asking too much. And as far as Guyton is concerned, he's an inside linebacker. He's an interior player. You're not going to be putting Gary Guyton on the edge. He's not a viable replacement for Vrabel. You basically need Vrabel to play better. That's what it comes down to. He has to be better.
Right.
Now, Adalis Thomas, since he's moved back to his customary role on the outside. Now, although he does play a little inside at times, but he's far more on the outside on the edge than he was last year. And now he's starting to produce and take over that role as the best pass-rushing linebacker. And you're seeing it by playing about 60 snaps a game on average. And that's the big thing for Thomas. And they're starting to get more out of him and a little bit less out of Vrabel. So you wonder if it kind of levels off a bit. I don't think that's the way the Patriots look at it. But I think from a statistical standpoint, that's kind of what's happening.
By the way, he also asked, what's the latest on Oliver Ross?
The clock's still ticking.
Okay.
He's got, I think, another week left now, including these few days. So he came off prior to the Bronco game.
Before the Broncos.
Right.
Right.
So he has a 21-day window from the day he starts practicing, which is starting to close. So you wonder if he's going to be healthy enough. He may have to be released or put on IR for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not activated for this game, then that pretty much does it.
Okay.
So, I thought he'd be a guy that could come in as a starter because Nick Kazier hasn't played particularly well at right tackle, and now he's a little bit banged up. But you know what? Mark Lavore has played pretty well at tackle, filling in for Kazier. So maybe they're looking forward thinking, you know what? Ross isn't 100% and he may never be 100%. This guy Lavore is doing an okay job. Let's keep him and let's go with him. That may end up being what's happening because they've both essentially moved ahead of Wesley Britt, who has not played a lot in the backup role. Now It seems like it's Lavore's job. And, you know, Ross may have a pretty big hill to climb if he wants to get on this active roster.
This one comes from Christian, who says, good win over the Rams. So far, it looks like Jake Long is the better pick over Golston. Solid effort on Dean, even though Castle threw two picks that were tipped. His comfort level in the pocket and going through his progressions is clearly evident, which is what we've been talking about. That hasn't been there in recent weeks and is hopefully showing up at the right time. Big test in Indy this week. Colts need this win bad. There's no doubt about that. And he says, as for Moss, I agree with Andy earlier. Countless catches come to mind like last year, like the ones in the end zone against the Bengals and the Colts when he basically leaped over defenders. Don't get me wrong, I don't think he's checking out, but it just seems like he was hell-bent on proving everybody wrong last year, and this year it's like, now what do I do?
Well, I agree. I think the effort is there. I don't think it's an effort issue. I don't think he is taking himself out of games and has just pretty much mailed it in at this point. I think what happened was last year he set the bar so high. I mean, you catch 23 touchdowns. What do you do as an encore? If you catch 15, that's a great year, but it's a down year by your standards. So it's hard to live up to that. At the same time, he's dropping way too many open ones, and that's not really – that has nothing to do with the bar being lowered a bit. Regardless of what kind of year you're having, you have to make some of the catches that he has missed this year.
Yeah, and that's my other nitpick, by the way, is Randy Moss. He just seems at times almost too lackadaisical.
Yeah.
Like the concentration isn't there. Like he's either looking upfield or he's looking away, and the ball gets into his hands, and he doesn't look the ball into his hands. I'm not sure what it is specifically, but my biggest nitpick is we're not getting the Randy Moss that we had last year. And
well, you're not going to get that.
Well, okay.
That is physically impossible to get 23 touchdowns.
That I agree with. But
catch
I still
ones.
Think we can. Yeah, you got to catch the ones in your hands. I mean, let's face it. Matt Castle is not Tom Brady.
No.
And so when he's spot on with his throws, you damn sure better catch
right.
him. You know? And so it's not Matt Castle's fault that Tom Brady's not out there. Can't do it. You got to catch the balls from whoever's playing quarterback. If it were you, Mike Parenti, playing quarterback, it would still be Randy Moss's job to catch the damn ball.
He would have 30 touchdowns if I were back there. I would be threading the needle.
We need to sign this guy up. All right. Webradio@patriots.com. That's our email address, 508-543-7482. The telephone number, keep it coming. Keep the emails coming. Keep your nitpicks on this Nitpick Tuesday coming. Brian Lowe will join us. Brian Lowe will be joining us coming up in the second hour. And, Mike, I appreciate your standing by and being with us in this particular hour of the program.
Yeah, I'll hang around for a little bit.
Good.
I want to talk to Brian Lowe.
You want to talk to B-Lowe? Okay.
Who doesn't?
Good. All right, well, then we'll do that after this in the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
On home turf.
With
the Super League Championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack started just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. We say hello to Brian Lowe.
Hello to Brian Lowe, huh?
What's up, B-Lowe?
What's going on? Good to be here with Michael Parenti.
Hey, how about that? Mike's going to stick around for a while.
We got bonus
visits today from Mike Parenti.
Bonus Cantos.
Unexpected pleasant treat for both of us.
I don't know about pleasant.
Nah, maybe not.
Unexpected, yes. We had a lot of quality time Sunday trying to chase down a golf cart. We went through kittens.
What
we
were
had
chasing?
We were
both going to go see our friends from the UK Patriots fan club,
and it
turned out that their tailgate party was it Wrentham or was it Attleboro?
Quincy, I think.
I can't remember. They were intending to have their tailgate in one of the parking lots close to the stadium. They were in, you know, across Route 1 and down the road, and you know, we've got camera equipment and all that. So to walk over there, drive over there, it was just going to be a little too tough, and we're trying to get a golf cart, but. Michael and I and our camera crew, we ended up going up into the stands shortly before the game to chat with them and interview them. And we're going to have a little bit on Patriots today.
Oh, very good.
How about that? New episode coming up, by the way. I'm refreshing my browser all night.
Once a day, usually late
afternoon. Sounds
dirty,
doesn't it?
Yes.
I was home in bed refreshing my browser.
Come refresh my browser.
Michael Parenti's here to bring, you know, this isn't a very dirty show, John.
No, but I bring the toilet humor.
Yeah, you need Mike.
Mike sat in the Andy Hart chair to bring the toilet humor to the program.
Well, there's a lofty standard to meet if you sit in the Andy Hart chair when it comes to dirty.
Yeah, I agree.
Andy's digestive problem.
Okay.
Thanks.
I need that. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Let's get back to some nitpicks. By the way, that's what we're working on here on Tuesday. It's Nitpick Tuesday inside the playbook as we kind of nitpick at some of the things we didn't particularly like about the Patriots in their most recent game, which, of course, was the 23-16 win over the Rams on Sunday. It's our job to sort of kind of take a look at the things we don't like as well as the things we liked about, you know, Sunday's game. Before we get back to the emails, let me let Michael get to his chief nitpick because you've mentioned that in the last hour, and I don't want to keep anybody waiting or hanging.
No.
They're just thinking, oh, God, I've got to know what Mike Parenti's nitpick is about this team.
I think he's mocking you, by the way.
Well, the secondary was my nitpick.
Okay, good.
But Chris Hansen's not punting all that well either, so I guess I could throw him in the mix too. I mean, he's had a couple of punts down inside the 10 and in recent weeks, but way too many touchbacks, Brian. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed this too, but he's booming everything out of the back of the end zone.
That was his problem
on
the other
short
day.
Fields.
That was his problem the other day. It's been on and off, but I think if you're asking your punter to be a precision punter and punt to a certain point, if that's the job, I don't even think the best punter in the league could ever do it 100%.
That's supposed to be his specialty, though.
No, even if it's your specialty. I mean, there's too many vagaries when you're dealing with a punt and where it's going to land and all that. And granted, this was not a good day for him. And I'm not saying he's a great punter or it's even been a great year. I'm just saying that if that's his job, there are too many things out of his control to have it so precise. Now, he's also been overshadowed by some ridiculous punting jobs by opposing players this year. Mm. San Francisco, this guy for Denver the other day who had he had the 70-yarder that was, and then there was a penalty, and he's backed up in the back of his end zone. You're thinking, okay, he's not going to get off another 70-yard punt. He got off like a 60-yard punt. I mean, so he's kind of been overshadowed. Hansen's not doing anything special here, and this wasn't a particularly good day or anything good. This wasn't a particularly good day. He's had his moments, but I don't think he's
not good enough.
Not good enough, but you know what? For some reason, it's been good enough for a year and a half for this coach. What are we missing?
I mean, can I do a little?
No one else is out there.
I'd like to do a little.
Josh Miller.
Josh Miller.
That ship has sailed, my friend.
So I'd like to do a little analyzation of what's that?
Brooks Bernard. There's why. Okay, that's why Chris Hansen's still here.
Yeah, let me do a little analyzing of Hansen's punt.
Yeah.
All right? When he's releasing the ball, and I happen to notice this last week, a lot of guys, when they're trying to go for the coffin corner or they're trying to deaden the ball inside the 20-yard line, you know, get that all-important stat, I-20, inside the 20 for their punts, a lot of guys put the nose of the ball down when they release in order to get the spin or the kickback, if you will, once the ball does hit the turf. Honestly, when Hansen lets it go, it's the same way almost every time. He's got the nose of the ball up, which means the ball's has a tendency to hit on the flat part of the ball, the large part, the bouncy part, in other words, right?
There
and it's
going
to bounce up, and it's going to go through. There you go. Thank you very much. I have just analyzed the punter.
Let's get Brad Seely in here. Let's see if that's the case.
I bet he would agree that Hansen has been subpar all year.
Well, if it's something like that, wouldn't he be coached on changing that up?
You would think so.
Wouldn't he be coached? And if for some reason Hansen didn't have the ability to do it or the ability to be coached, wouldn't they get someone who at least is a decent punter and maybe coachable to?
Well, they brought in five guys in the practice squad this year to punt, and obviously none of them are any good.
Right.
So
right.
I think they've pretty much given up on that project. Like, we're not going to find anybody, so we're going to have to stick with what we have.
Well,
the punter issue is not a big. It shouldn't be the biggest issue.
No,
in the team.
It's not. But here's the thing. I think they felt like, you know what, Hansen still got a leg for him to do what we need him to do, because we're not into, you know, the coffin corner thing a lot because we feel confident about our defense. So they thought, because we don't have anybody that's head and shoulders above Hansen, let's just keep Hansen. That's what I think happened.
And maybe he's just a dominant holder.
Maybe he's just a dominant holder. Somebody to hold before he can find somebody.
I'm kidding there. And, but the truth
I hope so.
But the fact is, to me, I mean, I don't know what punters are out there. I don't know which punters
dominant
they'd be going
holder.
After.
That's the first time
dominant.
I've heard that. That's good.
Ken Walter the dominant holder of this generation? Wasn't
he?
Yeah,
where is
he now? Buddy?
I'm saying Chris Hansen is a top five holder in the league right now.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
No, I'm kidding there. No, but
he's
got to
punt better, Brian.
He probably does.
Too many touchbacks. He's not Gostkowski. Gostkowski, you want touchbacks. Your punter, you don't.
Gostkowski, maybe that balances out. Gostkowski's touchbacks, Hanson's touchdown. No, I don't know. Listen, I don't. You make a great point, John, on the punting, and that's your observation.
I hadn't noticed that. So good
here's,
for you.
Here's the other observation that I've noticed about special teams. Now,
I don't pay attention.
Obviously, you know, the human joystick was running back kicks for St. Louis, and I don't think he's quite the same
joystick.
Type of. You didn't know that was Dante Hall's nickname?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just funny because we had our Urban Dictionary word of the day that involved joysticks, but
no
we
way.
Won't go
Did
there.
It really?
Okay.
What was it again?
Dayton Arcade.
The Dayton Arcade.
So a different Dayton. Type of joystick, Michael, you're saying?
Hey, can you print that out again, by the way?
Okay.
I forgot to read it.
Okay.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
All right. No, I was just going to say that Dante Hall, you knew going into the game that even though he's still not quite what he was when he was with Kansas City, he's still pretty effective. And we saw a great return that
opening
ended up coming
kickoff.
Back.
Yeah.
Opening kickoff was fantastic. But the Patriots did make the adjustment special teams-wise. I was very happy to see Kelly Washington flying back to the football again. That was a big step in the right direction. Ray Ventrone, I thought, had a very, very good hit on Hall in the second half of that one as well that allowed Washington to come up and make a hit and finish off a tackle. So, the special teams were pretty good with the exception, of course, of what we were talking about with Chris Hanson. Gostkowski, though, I thought was just a little off. I would think that he would have put a little more effort into getting that ball deep into the end zone, knowing that a guy like Hall was back there. I don't think I saw that, and maybe it was just – maybe it was designed like that. I'm not quite certain.
Right, try to nullify any kind of return. But the Patriots special teams, I'm not talking about punting necessarily, but kickoff coverage, punt coverage has been exceptional this year. And I think you mentioned Ray Ventrone. I think he's been maybe the most consistent – one of the most consistent special teams performers on the team.
Ventrone flying down there. Kelly Washington has been fabulous, I think, when he's been healthy, mm-hmm. when he's been down there. I think the Patriots special teams and kick return, teams pretty doggone good. Now, of course, I say that, with the onside kick, which I thought was a brilliant move
by
Jim Haslett and the Rams.
Why not?
Open up the second half because, frankly, that just took the wind right out of the Patriots' sails. They had a chance with the opening possession of the second half to basically put the Rams away with that opening drive if they scored.
Right.
The Rams took that chance away from them. Now, give kudos to the Patriots' defense for stopping them, on downs on that drive, but I thought that was a brilliant play, and I'm really surprised we don't see that happen more often.
You're absolutely right because other than the Rams' sideline, was there a soul in this building who saw that coming?
No.
Including the Patriots sideline.
It wasn't an
outside
kick situation.
Right, exactly. And they didn't have the right personnel on the field. And, hey, great call by them. I don't think the Patriots screwed up by not recovering it. Who knew that was coming? That's what happened. But the point is, they recovered from that. And you're right. Why not do that every now and then? If you're a team, especially if you're a team on the road.
Hey, you're two and four. Absolutely.
And you're hanging around in the game. It's
do
not
it.
Like, it's a close
you go out and you play to win
the game. You play to
win. Well, you know
what
it is.
How's that coach doing these days?
Yeah.
Is he playing to win any
game?
I'll tell you what.
He's playing to get
it. You almost won that game.
Hello?
And the opposing coach maybe would have gotten fired if they didn't win that game.
How about that?
I'll tell you what, genius, right?
Yeah.
With the onside kick, I think the big thing for the Rams was they had just allowed a score at the end of the half. The Pats had deferred the coin toss, so they were going to get back-to-back offensive possessions, and that kind of negated the whole thing with the onside kick. Now, like you said, Brian, the big thing was stopping them, I think, 3-and-out, wasn't it?
Too? It was 3-and-out.
Yeah.
6-yard run for no gain, incomplete pass, and the Patriots get the ball. Now, the Patriots ended up having an interception. But it became a field. It sort of became a field position
it
game
did.
At that point. That was big because the Patriots after that 3-and-out by St. Louis, Patriots get the ball at the 10. They throw an interception.
Right. Yeah.
St. Louis comes back with a field goal to tie the game right there. So even though the onside kick itself didn't work right off the bat, it became a bit of a field position game and helped out St. Louis.
By the way, another nitpick. I don't like deferring to the second half.
I think the whole rule change is ridiculous and totally overblown.
I understand why you do it in the college game because momentum is such a huge part of the college game. But I think in the pros, man, if you got the ball to start with, go score.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's how you set the tone.
Precisely. You need to make a statement right off the opening bell. And I'm not a big fan of deferring when you win the toss to the second half. I'm just not a big fan of it.
And one thing we've been hearing about with this whole deferring thing is, if you defer, what kind of confidence does that say in your offense and all that? And I don't know. Is there anything to that?
I think it's because you want to take the ball, or at least have the opportunity to take the ball right out of the locker room.
It's also play in the wind and where you want the win in the fourth quarter and all those factors.
That's right.
That's part
as well.
Of it, too, yeah.
Right.
So
it all enters into the equation.
But on Sunday, it was crystal clear, no wind.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a factor.
Yeah, take the ball and go score. That's what I'm saying. In the NFL,
we want the ball, we're going to score.
Yeah, right.
Like Matt Hasselbeck said.
Right.
He threw a touchdown pass.
He did.
It's the other team.
Yeah, but
he threw a touchdown.
It was
pass.
A TD. Yeah,
Mrs. Right. Matt Hasselbeck, though, is making more news than he is.
Good right.
For her.
Right.
God bless.
His sister-in-law, right? Mm. It's right? Tim.
No. His wife.
What's his wife saying?
She's Elizabeth Hasselbeck?
Right, that's
Sarah
Palin. Tim's wife.
No, I'm sorry. That's right.
Tim's,
yeah,
wife.
Tim's
yeah,
wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
Hasselbeck.
No, no, no. Wait
yeah,
a second. No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
That's not Tim Hasselbeck.
Absolutely, yeah. Elizabeth no. Hasselbeck is
TMZ.com.
Yeah.
Gary, can you get on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Tim's wife is Elizabeth.
Is Elizabeth.
Oh, okay. Well,
sister,
I missed
I'll
out.
Be
yeah.
damned. Yeah. Yeah,
sister-in-law.
Both be damned, huh?
Oh, I know B-Lo okay. goes
listen,
to
listen, I know my view.
That's right. I got the, I've got know, I've got I should have known better.
B-Lo reads page 6 every day in the New York Post.
Sorry. What's wrong with that? Get a lot of news that way.
Yeah, news. Quote unquote news.
News.
You mean real news?
You know where, like, Gwyneth Paltrow is eating lunch. That's great.
Right. Scott from Bristol.
And guys, who she's eating lunch with.
Right.
I have a question about the Rooney Rule. As I understand it, the Rooney Rule requires National Football League teams to interview minority candidates for head coaching opportunities. A provision in Jim Haslett's contract was voided because of this rule, a 6-game win requirement to continue as the head coach next year. My question is, what is the difference between Jim Haslett's contract situation and Jason Garrett, who, as I understand it, is next in line for the Dallas head coaching job? Will Dallas be required to interview minority candidates, even though it seems Dallas has already selected him? Are they already in violation of this rule?
I don't know the exact rule, but I can say this. I'm pretty sure Dallas and Seattle are in the same position. I think Seattle has already Jim Moore Jr. is replacing Mike Holmgren. And there is some sort of rule, again, I don't know the exact wording of it, there is something in place where you can hire a coach with the intention of, hire an assistant with the intention of that person
right.
taking over, and maybe it's if it's a year in advance type of thing. I don't know the specifics of it. It's a great question, and it's definitely one that I'll take a look at and try to find out the answer to.
Okay.
Because there is a difference between a coach being fired in season and the interim replacing him, and that in that case you do need to abide by the Rooney Rule, and having a guy in writing in place for a coach who's going to resign or going to quit after a year. I don't know the specifics of it, but Seattle is in the same position as Dallas, I believe.
Yeah, on a couple of fronts, I'm against the whole idea of bringing in a guy and grooming him for the job, because you don't know who's going to be available in 2 or 3 years anyway. So why make that commitment?
Right,
you cannot make that kind of commitment that far in advance anyway. Number two, why interview somebody with no intention of hiring? It's a waste of everybody's time. And I'm not – listen, the Rooney Rule, I understand what the point is, but if they have a guy they want and your coach has just been fired at the end of the year and you have your guy right there, why fly people in for something you have no intention of getting anything out of?
I agree with
you. It wastes everybody's time.
I agree with you, because if St. Louis ends up going, say, 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, and Haslett
has
a guy,
job.
Then if they go by the Rooney Rule and bring in a half dozen candidates to interview for the job – Those other half dozen candidates are going to know they have no shot. They're
right.
going to be they're suckers. They're just there to play the game. Haslett would have the job. And why should I agree. I understand.
I know what they're trying to do, but those guys are wasting their time as well. They may be another opportunity somewhere else, and now you're going to miss out. So just bring in who you want to bring in. Let teams hire who they want to hire.
And I think they are, and I think you know whether it's I think the Rooney Rule has helped, and if you I'm not sure what the percentage is of minority head coaches in the NFL, but it's certainly it's certainly grown. It's certainly,
all it guarantees is an interview. You don't know for sure if if Tomlin was brought in because of the Rooney Rule or because they really wanted him.
Right.
Oh, well, we have to bring this guy in. No. Maybe that's the guy they really wanted.
Right. And when
you can't say what's the percentage of the Rooney Rule taking.
And when you do bring guys in for interviews, it does help their overall profile, even if they don't get the job. Just your name being out there as a candidate for a head coaching job definitely helps that person's profile. So, you know, it's an interesting question. I'm curious myself. I'm going to try to take a look after the show on exactly what the stipulation is there.
Todd says, I'm guessing there won't be a lot of assistant coaches in the Patriots Hall of Fame, presented by Raytheon.
technically the Hall at...
Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon.
Right?
But what about Dante?
For a head coach? I don't think you want...
For a coach.
I don't think he wants to be. I think that's...
No. For a coach
a coach
in the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
in the Patriots
sure.
Hall
yeah.
of Fame.
You know why? And
survived
I think
many generations.
No question.
There, right?
I think he'd be in the category of like the equivalent of a Troy Brown or a Kevin Falk, a guy who's underrated, sort of underappreciated, but then he gets to a point in his career where you're like, wow, this guy's lasted.
Think how many coaching staffs that he's been through.
He's been here other than I think there was 1 year or one short period of time where he left for maybe the Colts. But other than that, since like the late 70s, he's been here. or early 80s. He's been an assistant coach here.
Right.
Under, so how many head coaches is that? 10?
Raymond Berry.
25 seasons here.
25 seasons. Count them. Raymond Berry.
Yeah.
Rod Rust.
Yeah.
Dick McPherson.
Yeah.
Who came after McPherson? Bill Parcells.
Bill Parcells. Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick.
Six coaches.
And the first one you mentioned was Rust?
No, the first one was Raymond Berry.
Yeah. And he's coached and everything, too.
What was his first year here, if you're looking at the
82.
So was that Berry's first?
Was that Berry's first year?
I think Berry started around.
Yeah, right around there.
Sure, why not?
Right around there. But six coaches. How many ownerships? How many administrations? How many GMs? You know, how many decision makers? Bottom line.
Well, let's see. Six head coaches and one, two, three, four leaderships.
Yeah.
Four
yeah.
ownerships. Right.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
that time.
Yep.
Yeah. That was Ron Meyer's first year.
Okay. So
Ron
Meyer.
Seven coaches.
Seven coaches. And I think yeah. And that's a great question as far as you know what coaches right. do you bring in?
Meyer.
Berry, Rust.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Rust,
yeah.
McPherson,
yeah.
Parcells,
five,
Carroll,
six,
Belcher.
Seven.
Yeah.
There you go. Seven head coaches.
Yeah.
That's significant.
And like I said, he's coached everything. Tight ends, offensive line, which he does now.
That's what's remarkable.
Special teams, defensive assistant, linebackers. I mean, God, he has so much football knowledge. And to survive, like you said, all those administrations really says a lot. Because most of the time they come in, they just pretty much
they bring in their own guys.
People,
they bring in who they're going to know with and say, "Hey, I know so and so is going to run the offensive
yeah.
line. I've worked with him in the past."
Guys, well respected.
Yeah, so it definitely tells you that his respect level around the league is at a high, even though he's never really, he's never really aspired to being a head coach. He's been an interim head coach for the Patriots.
Yep.
You know, he
right.
was. He
right.
Was, he
when Belichick left for his father's funeral. Right.
right. It was three, 4 years.
He
ago.
Was also, I believe, an interim prior to that. I think in. I want to say it was somewhere around
no, you're
that,
right. there
that
was
Rust
time.
McPherson
yeah,
era.
Yeah, you're right. I think maybe Rust left.
Yes.
Was, well, are you sure? Because
I'm not sure, but
he was in Indianapolis from 89 to 90. 90 was Rust's only season.
No, I think 90 and 91, and then
yeah,
McPherson
right.
was 92.
Yeah.
Only one. But
I can't even get it right. I have the media guy in front of me.
the most way. Fascinating thing about Dante Scarnecchia, in addition to the notion of how many different positions he's coached, if you've ever been to training camp or you've even been in a game or seen practices or whatever, this guy is the smallest human being
right.
on the field.
Right.
And he's sitting
say,
there ripping
yeah.
6'9" Wesley Britt, and he's running from pillar to post to do it. He's a little whippersnapper, and he's the smallest guy on the field. He is a fascinating guy
yeah.
when you think about yeah. how a 5'8" or whatever he is guy is teaching leverage to these massive offensive linemen on how to block, how to footwork and body control and all that. It is fascinating. It's really tremendous how he can coach, how someone can coach a position like that when you're in such a different he's never he didn't. An NFL offensive lineman.
Right.
It's fascinating. He's a tremendous coach, and players constantly praise him for the way they prepare, the way they're prepared.
Whippersnapper, huh?
Yeah.
Are you my grandfather now?
Yeah.
Having your hip replaced today?
Let me suggest to Todd then that maybe you bring the fans are a part of each year's induction class. Bring his name up.
Yeah.
Bring his name up. That's the way to get his
deserves to be brought up.
Sure.
Yeah.
If anything.
It's going to be a tight it's going to be some tight races coming up.
Oh, yeah. So it'll be interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
But once this whole regime,
yeah,
in terms
the
of players,
current era,
availability.
Everybody in this era is going to
get that's the problem. You get so nostalgic. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bruschi, Vrabel, these guys all played a role, but are they really
right.
Hall of Famers?
Right.
Yeah.
It's
right.
a really interesting debate.
Him, too, by the way.
Who?
Dan Klecko.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't even.
How about Dan Klecko and Kyle Eckel, teammates now with Philly?
Eckel, Klecko.
Isn't that great?
It's like an anagram or something.
Yeah.
John in South Carolina says this question was asked, and I had a hard time coming up with an answer. He says if we magically could have Ty Law back at his prime, but had to replace one starter in our secondary, and would only have Law for a 2-year contract, would you take him? And who would you drop?
I'd replace anyone in the secondary
yeah,
to get Ty Law in his prime.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Certainly
right.
any of their current – to get Ty Law in his prime.
He says
for
his
two
answer
years?
Was to take Law and drop O'Neal, but he's wondering if there's another answer.
Oh, O'Neal would be the first guy to go.
Who would be the next guy?
I mean, you go start backwards.
Well, wait.
What,
replace,
quarterback or the whole secondary?
Replace a starter in the secondary?
Starter in the secondary.
So say you're, right. their current four regular starters being
right.
Ellis Hobbs,
right.
Deltha O'Neal, James Sanders, Brandon Merriweather.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, O'Neal would be first because
yes.
if Ty Law is prime versus in 08 and 09 versus
– correct.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Ty Law in his prime is better than Ellis Hobbs right now.
I'd have to say Hobbs.
And then, I mean, the safety, you're talking some different variables here because it's sort of a different position. But,
right.
Well, Ty Law in his prime was...
The answer
was,
is take Ty Law and drop whoever.
That's what I'm saying.
Drop whoever.
Drop
whoever.
I drop any of them.
Any of them.
I drop any of them for Ty Law for 2 years in his prime. No
like
question about
it. You could have Babe Ruth who you're drafting.
Bottom line is...
The whole team.
Bottom line, right now, cornerback is probably their biggest problem area right now, and Ty Law in his prime was a top five cornerback in the league.
Sure,
there's no question. Yeah, give me Ty Law for anyone. Now, the more realistic question is, would Ty Law is Ty Law on this team's radar screen? Ty Law, who he is right now at this very moment?
No.
Hey,
because they could have had him last week.
I agree. If
they
he
had
was,
a roster spot,
if he was on the radar screen,
Aliquippaquips.
Just like
now, why
did
you say last week? What was last week?
Oh, no, I'm talking with Ronnie Harrison going on IR.
Oh, okay. But
if they wanted to bring him back and then go with what they had, do they really need Antoine Spahn over Ty Law, another safety that can't play?
No, that's what's telling. Is obviously
they didn't want John Lynch either, right? He was out there. They kept saying, well, will you bring back John Lynch? Oh, we had a roster spot.
Yeah.
And we didn't bring back John Lynch because he sucks.
Right.
No, but, that's what it says.
But exactly is the overall secondary situation worse off today than it was last week at this time? Depending on the status of O'Neal, even the stat. I mean,
is it worse off now? Yeah.
So I'm saying like maybe now they there's a chance
because
now
Harrison's out there.
Right, well,
and that
but I'm saying even from a week ago with Delta O'Neal, maybe he's concussed, maybe he's hobbling this week. Maybe Ellis Hobbs had whatever he injured at the end of the game with shoulder, I think it was.
It's going to have to be an injury situation, Brian, because clearly when all those guys were healthy, they didn't want Ty Law.
I agree. No, I completely agree with you, but I'm saying maybe now they're at the point they've brought up Antoine Spahn. I mean, do they bring up Mark Dillard next and completely convert Brandon Merriweather to cornerback and all that? I mean, I'm saying if there is an issue now at cornerback, do they have to reevaluate again and maybe...
Well, Merriweather's not going anywhere. He's a safety now, and I think he's played that role, and he's just starting to come into his own as an NFL safety. You can't go and stick him a corner now. The kid's head will explode.
You wouldn't... Yeah. Which they sort of... They
that's no knock on him. I'm just saying that goes for anybody who's finally starting to get some confidence back there and become a vocal leader and make plays. Okay, now go play a different position.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Even if you played it in college, it's different at this level.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally
agree.
Totally agree. John says, I was listening to WEEI, and the show at times acted like the Patriots' entry into the postseason was a foregone conclusion.
Well, of course.
Well, that's because they're
so
all cheerleaders
winning every
over
game there.
Exactly. While our offense is making progress, there were still a lot of mistakes, and our running back situation worries me. All props given to the great job Falk has done. Our secondary may not be able to get much better. I am not sure if there is anyone in our cornerback core that is a legitimate starting cornerback on another team.
Well,
I know Hobbs is supposed to be good, but he keeps on giving up big plays, and I don't understand why he plays so far off the receiver.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I know some of his experience, but is any cornerback we have a keeper as of right now?
Well,
I think Hobbs is still a work in progress.
I think Hobbs has some value, but and it's too early to tell. I mean, these rookies haven't looked great by any means, but you're a rookie cornerback going up against some of these wide receivers they've gone up against. I think it's a lot to ask, and I don't think we can write them off just yet. It might be hard pressed to feel that they can make a huge difference in 2008, but they're not going anywhere. I think the cornerback situation is a problem area. You don't feel confident with any of them. When Ellis Hobbs was opposite Asante Samuel, okay, fine. You've got your shutdown guy, and you live and die with what Ellis Hobbs can do on the other side. When Ty Law was here in his prime and Asante Samuel was the young guy who just coming into his own, we didn't know what we had yet. Okay, you got Ty Law. He's a shutdown guy. You deal with Asante. They don't have the shutdown guy right now. They don't have that clear-cut number one guy. They're facing some big-time offenses, including in these next couple of weeks. It's a problem area right now. They don't have the number one guy, and they don't have a lot of depth. And that's an issue. The combination right there, that's a tough combination to overcome when you're going up against Indianapolis, when you're going up against an emerging Buffalo offense. Brett Favre, he hasn't been great, but he's still Brett Favre, and they got some weapons. They've got some tough weeks coming up right now. And without having that clear-cut, definitive number one guy and without having depth, when Mike Richardson is your number three guy, which he sort of is right now, and Will Hite and Wheatley, who are your rookies, who might have some promise, but they're your fourth and fifth guys right now. That's a problem right now. That's a problem.
And he's right. They don't have a number one. They have a guy who's the best by default.
Yeah.
In other words, we're just not going to throw to Hobbs. We'll throw to O'Neal all day, and that's a problem.
And maybe it's one thing if you don't have that number one, but your top four are all very good, if not great. Mm-hmm. They don't have that either.
No.
Their number one guy isn't great, and their two, three, and four guys aren't maybe even very good.
And right now, Will Hyde is still learning, and when he's out there at times, he's struggling covering those slot receivers. He just got beat a few times on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right, though, too. Yeah.
But Wheelie not even being ahead of Will Hyde at this point, for a guy that we talked about earlier in the show, a guy we thought was a starter coming out of camp,
right,
and wasn't even on the field Sunday until Hobbs got hurt.
Now, let me throw this out there. You know, they signed and released Fernando Bryant and Jason Webster in this offseason.
Right.
Are those, you know, was Fernando Bryant?
He must have been terrible.
He had a terrible preseason, and I was surprised they cut him, but he probably deserved to be cut. But how bad, you know, he doesn't have a job right now, and he at least had 4 or 5 months of the offseason in the system. I wonder if they've considered him, if they've brought him in for another look, or Jason Webster, who was hurt for most of the preseason and, you know, maybe just didn't really get the opportunity to compete for a job. You wonder if these guys are options. I mean, Ty Law at this point, it's not even worth bringing up. But a guy like Bryant or Webster, who are a little younger than Law and have been here as recently as August, you wonder if they are, if not clear-cut solutions, if they are options if they're in a pinch this week.
I would say Bryant, no chance. I think the ship has sailed. They saw all they needed to see of him in camp, and specifically in the preseason.
I tend to agree, but they might
maybe, though, because he was hurt, and that wasn't really a performance issue. The performance issue was he couldn't perform.
Exactly.
He couldn't play.
And he was an injury-prone guy anyway.
Have we heard anything on his status, though? We don't really know what the deal
is. I don't think either one of those guys.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think either one of those guys has found another job.
No. So my guess is Webster still isn't healthy.
Yeah, you're probably right. And
did he get on the field, though? Didn't he get on the field for the last preseason game?
I think he did. He did play in the last preseason game.
All right, so he played a little bit, but not nearly enough. I mean, obviously, he hadn't done anything since May.
Right. And
can't make the club from the tub, Bilo.
That's a great line. And I agree with all this, and you're right. The ship has probably sailed, but I'm just saying if they are in more of a bind, you know, we won't know really until tomorrow afternoon, practice and injury report. If they are in more of a bind right now than we think they are or than they were last week because either Hobbs or O'Neal are struggling, or if they feel like, boy, we've seen enough out of Richardson, out of Will Hyde and all these guys, and while we're not writing them off their careers, we can't rely on them as, you know, this Sunday night in Indianapolis, you wonder if these are options. Bryant, or, you know,
we got to wait on Lewis Sanders, too, though.
Yeah, but you wonder if he can ever string together multiple games. I mean, he's had a few different injuries, and I agree. I mean, he's looked bad. He hasn't gotten beat like some of these. I think he's looked like he could be a dependable, reliable guy. He just can't stay on the field.
Have you guys seen the news flashes on ESPN News this afternoon where the Rams are taking the game tapes from the game on Sunday and they're sending them to the league office complaining apparently that there were many missed calls by the officiating crew because the Patriots only flagged the one time that the penalty was refused?
Well, there were a few that they missed.
Yeah, and I did see that story this morning that the Rams were a little unhappy with the fact that, you know, they were called for, what, 6, 7, 8, something like that.
And the Patriots officially did not have
penalties.
A single penalty. I know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's not the only situation. Vince Wilfork, apparently Vince Wilfork was meeting with the commissioner today.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if you guys spoke about that one earlier.
He elbowed the guy in the head. I mean, that, you know.
Well, is he talking about, is he meeting to discuss one particular incident or the fact that over 2-3 years now he's been fined multiple, you know.
I'm sure that'll come up, too.
Right.
I don't think I'm just
going to
cut it out.
It's all going to come up.
But do we think he's going to, you know, I guess.
He could get suspended.
He could get suspended.
And like we were talking about in the air before, and we talked about it in this show, too, take it now. Because you got Buffalo coming up in 2 weeks, and you got all those division games. Those are more important.
Yep, they are. And if it happens,
you should take it now.
And he's got no chance to win that appeal anyway. Goodell's going to tell him to go screw. Sit out the game. You're not getting back in there. So
well, it's a matter of
might
you're right.
Take it now.
The whole appeal process sort of comes down to, you know, which game you want to which game is best for
when
you.
When do you want to do this?
You know. And you're right. If a suspension does come down, and
I have to admit, I'm a little surprised at the rep that Vince Wilfork is gaining because of the little chippy little things that he's gone out there and done.
I mean,
I was shocked.
Had a lot of them, John.
I was shocked to see the elbow. I mean, or even to hear the elbow because I never saw it.
Are you being facetious?
No.
Well, I'm saying because he's racked up a lot of penalties.
I realize
that.
But a lot of that is there for a reason. I think a lot of that, though, is a byproduct of the position that he plays. I mean, look at it. He's at the dirtiest position on the field.
Well, okay, but he elbowed the quarterback in the head Sunday, 2 weeks ago.
I understand that. I understand.
You can't, regardless of what's going on there, you got to, at some point, cooler heads have to prevail. I mean, he poked Brandon Jacobs in the eye. He gave him the Three Stooges.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah. Can't do that stuff.
I don't care what's going on.
You can't do that, you know, and I mean, listen, I don't think he's a dirty player. I think he's done some questionable things on the field. But that's the grave that you dig for yourself when you keep doing that and getting fined for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like
you can't feel sorry that he's got a bad rep because he has this laundry list of penalties. Or fines, rather.
You hear his name come up more than a lot of others, I think, with these types of situations. I don't watch and hear about probably every incident, every game. And I don't think any of us do, but it seems like you see his name more often than others. In these types of situations,
unless you think they're targeting him for some reason, why does his name come up and a lot of other guys don't?
Yeah,
because I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure a lot of it's instigated, and other guys say things too. But at some point, you just can't respond to everything. You can't do it because you hurt yourself, you hurt the team. Now, if you get suspended for this thing, is it worth it? No, it's not worth it.
Of course not. You're hurting
the
team.
Was it worth it to smack Jay Cutler in the head to get suspended for the Colt game, possibly?
Right. Whatever game it is. 1/16th
whatever game it is.
I mean, there's only 16 of these. And,
and this is going to be a tight playoff race, right?
Allegedly.
Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows what this means?
Well, that's why I guess I'm disappointed, because it seems to me that he is a, certainly he's a focal point of what the Patriots are trying to accomplish defensively. He is a mainstay on that defensive line. He's a consistent, pretty high-level performer, but because he resides down in the trenches, and as I suggested, it's the dirtiest position on the field.
Right.
Look, there's any grab, because guys are pushing and shoving and grabbing and clawing and pinching and doing all kinds of gouging and anything else you can think of. It's going on down there. Don't be naive. If you've ever been in a rugby scrum, if you've ever been in the middle of a player scrum, well, then you know, right? I know you have been.
Every week.
You and Christina both.
Oh, wow, John. John. You got Gary.
Yeah, I'm here for 1 hour, and John Brooks resorting to potty humor.
Hey, Christina Akroff.
I'm telling you, this show is never as dirty as it is when Michael Parenti's on board.
It's true.
You brought that out of me today.
Or maybe it's a combination. Michael and I don't know if we've done a lot of radio together. Right? Maybe that's the combination of the two of us.
Part of it.
Hot naked burrito.
Boy.
There you go. All right. John, Bilo, and Mike. First time I have written into the show, but I write in to both PFW in Progress and the Fantasy Lowdown.
There you go.
This must be year one regular.
Year one fan.
It's all right.
Ouch. Hey, we're just
one
getting
more
the show
I
off the ground. We're just
more
trying to get
got.
The show off the ground.
That's
John.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's been pretty regularly, and have been listening to the show on podcast since the start of the season, as I can't listen live. I didn't see the match live as I was at Wembley, but I have seen some highlights of the match and noticed a couple of things. Number one, everything looked good. There was pressure, sacks, and an interception, as well as Castle hitting Falk for touchdown. But I have a nitpick for you, and that is Randy Moss. I believe this was my nitpick. I know we expect too much from him after last year, but the drop he made in the end zone would be something I would expect of a fifth or sixth receiver. He is the best receiver in the NFL and should be making catches like that.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I thought Fakir Brown had an outstanding game. He had he had his interception. He deflected a pass on the other interception.
Old Faker?
And he had two.
Old Faker.
However
himself.
You pronounce it. Fakir.
Be careful. Now.
I don't want to put too much thought into this. And then a couple
Fakir,
of plays.
I barely knew her.
A couple of plays on Moss.
I'm done, folks. Good night.
Yeah, really. We've got to get rid of this chair. This chair is absolutely, it's contagious.
That's true. Wow.
On with the commentary.
I'm not on with the commentary.
Hey, no, I know what you're trying to say.
Brown had a solid game.
I know what you're trying to say, right? They get paid too.
They get
paid.
Well, so
does Moss. He gets paid a hell of a lot more money than whatever his name is, Brown. He has to make some of those plays.
F. Brown.
Now, come on. The ball he dropped in the end zone, that has nothing to do with Brown.
That's his initial, John.
F. Brown, that's right.
That's his initial.
F. U. too.
This show is done. This is the last.
Maybe his middle name is
playbook.
It's all
maybe
over
his
now.
Middle name is Ulysses. I don't know. Maybe.
What in the hell is going on?
I know. It's all Peretti's fault.
We had this argument. Well, not really an argument. We were all on board. Now you're just disagreeing with everybody. But anywho, he gets paid to make those plays too, Moss.
And
he
does.
The one in the
does.
End zone, Brian. He has to catch that.
He
ball.
Has to catch the ball. He has to catch the ball.
And every now and then, when there's a
well, which one in the end? There were more than one.
The touchdown that went through his hands.
The one, okay. The one
that one.
Should have caught.
Yeah. And a lot of plays where, even if Champ Bailey goes up and you say, well, it's Champ Bailey. He's really good. Hey, I agree. He's good. But just as Champ Bailey is an elite corner, Randy Moss is an elite receiver.
Who's a foot taller than these guys, too.
And every now and then, you expect him to come down with that grab. Maybe two guys go up for the ball and there's a big tussle in midair and they hit the ground. Every now and then, you want Moss to get it.
Well, I mean,
you
every
can't
now
always
and then
excuse
he
it when the guy makes a play. You
but
can't
he,
always tip your cap to the other guy.
He d-
I used to hate when the Yankees did this. They get shut down by some scrub. Oh, well, he pitched well. No, you know what? You didn't hit tonight.
I agree with you.
And he dropped that ball, or he didn't grab that one from that guy's hands. Sometimes that happens.
Every now and then, Moss does come down with the ball.
He came down with 23 last year. I mean, that's
right.
The point.
Yeah.
Now, I think, like we said earlier, we set the bar so high because of what we did last year.
Right.
But regardless of what kind of year you're having, whether you're playing out of your mind or you're playing normal to your standards, the ball dropped in the end zone has to be caught.
Right, and combining that with the at least two that I can remember specifically in the San Diego game, there's been some missed opportunity. I'm with you there. Yeah. I'm with you there.
Some are good plays in the ball, and some are plays that maybe he has to fight a little bit harder for, too.
Sure. I think that's extremely accurate. The fact is that it just does not appear that he's going hard enough after it. That it's almost like nonchalant. And I don't know if it's an attention thing or whatever, but you don't see the intensity there.
And when you know what he can do, you know, he can be dominant even when he's nonchalant. So you think about how, you know, how dominant he can and should be every, you know, when he does put a little more effort into some of these bodies.
Absolutely.
He is one of those guys who makes it look easy.
We were talking a little in the opening hour, Mike, about MMA and the demise of Elite XC and all that.
Are we on this again?
Well, listen, William sends this email here, and he says, have you ever heard of chess boxing?
Chess boxing.
Still a Wu-Tang Clan song.
Chess boxing. He says, you'd think you could easily make fun of it, but it isn't as stupid a combo as one might think. He says, chess boxing is way better than Domino's MMA.
Ooh. So this guy's on my side, in other
apparently.
Words. Okay.
Apparently.
Okay. You missed the PFW in progress, Brian, where Matt from Oregon, one of our faithful listeners, challenged me to a fight. A good-natured exhibition because I don't like MMA and the UFC and all that crap. Not my thing. I'm a boxing guy. He says, okay, well, when I come back here, we'll have a contest or competition where he can only grapple and go for the legs where I could actually strike him. He can't strike me. Which you can't even hold fights like that to begin with.
Yeah, why would you?
No, that's just...
Plus, he's like 500 pounds and would just...
He'll just sit on you.
He's also trained like 15 years. There's no way I can win.
No.
I'm like Rocky against Jocko. You can't win.
You play to win the fight. You're not going to win it. You know why
You can't win, Rocky.
Yeah, why do it? Like I told John Rook, too. They said
addiction?
They said Apollo and Drago was just an exhibition, right? And then what happened there?
Right.
Dead.
Dale says, guys, you've covered most of my nits, but here's a stretch. Finding some variation for the wide receiver screen that will burn the defenses for sitting on that play. I notice the lesser teams can't defend this too well, but good defenses like to take that play away. This goes back to last year when teams like the New York Giants were able to just jump on that play and leave the Pats with apparently no options to exploit charging defensive backs and linebackers. Seems the Pats should be able to get a tight end out there or a curling receiver route to force defenses to stay back and respect that space, especially when the running backs are banged up and the Pats can't run the ball so well. Now, I'm not at the stadium during the game, so you can tell me if you ever see them set up that screen formation and then fake it and then go elsewhere.
Well, I guess what you could do is you could have everybody on the line pull to one side, and you can roll out and then fake the throw and hand off to somebody, try a reverse, I don't know, or you'd have to throw across your body to make something happen, some kind of bootleg. I mean, it's difficult, but it can certainly be done. I think the point he made about the Super Bowl is you don't want to become too predictable and be a one-trick pony on offense where now everybody's starting to sniff out the screen and they're ready for it when it comes, because then you got to rely on your deep passing game, which has been inconsistent. So that would be my only problem.
Yeah, it's a great play when it works, and that's
and it sucks when it doesn't.
but they have the
that's pretty good.
That's kind of what analysis sucked, by you. -6.
That's essentially what, you know what Josh McDaniels basically said that last week when he was talking about, you know, Moss was saying the week before that he was he had been trying to get the coaches to run that play for him and when the play works, everybody wants to run it. When it doesn't work, no one wants to run it. And you know, they used to do the Daniel Graham, they used to do that tight end sort of a screen. What do they call that play? Where the tight end screen, I think. I forget. I don't know what it's called.
But you guys know all the terminology.
I don't know any of the
terminology. The numbers and the letters.
I don't know any of the terminology. But they've been running this wide receiver sort of screen with every Welker, Gaffney, Falk, and Moss now. And, I don't know the X's and O's. I can't really comment on that too well. But
I vaguely remember the Daniel Graham screen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just, frankly, they just they don't have not going to the tight end at all this year. I don't know if that's just by design if it's because that, you know, Watson was hurt or, you know, I mean, we did
need
see
one to go to.
We saw David Thomas catch a pass, the one that he was, you know, had thrown to him. But I would argue that they're just not throwing to the tight end.
They combined have 13 catches for 134 yards this year, and they've probably, I mean, they have a few drops between them, but they haven't been thrown to more than 20 times.
No,
I think part of it is Castle's locking in on guys a little bit. And he's so reliant on Welker and Moss.
Well, maybe that's something, though, that that's an area where Mac
probably
has to
improve
to continue
and
to
Falk,
look.
Too. He
now,
throws the Falk a lot.
I will also say this. It's been my observation that they've held, in particular, Benjamin Watson back in pass-blocking coverage because of the problems they've had on the offensive line. And David Thomas has been known as a pretty good blocker as well, perhaps more so than as a receiver. So it's quite possible that these guys, by design, have been held back a little bit from being and more of an integral part of the pass-catching routine in the offense.
I think that's been the case. I mean, I don't think there's much question. They've needed to stay in to block. And the Patriots don't have that Graham, Kyle Brady type of blocker at tight end that has been essentially a six offensive lineman in recent years.
And they don't have a Tony Gonzalez either.
And they don't have a Tony. It's not like one of these guys is proven. You're right. Proven to be an
80-catch
guy.
Watson's got the potential, but we really haven't seen him take that next step yet.
No, we haven't. No.
And even in times this year, he's dropped some balls, just not getting to the ball.
This is
disappointing.
Fifth year, and at least for three or four of them, it's been, all right, this could be the breakout year for him offensively. This is the year. He's just so supremely gifted and talented athletically as far as being a pass receiver, and it just hasn't worked out that way at all. And it's probably a combination of the fact that he hasn't gotten the job done, and they've needed they've needed that body as a blocker.
An aside here, do you think Kansas City still tries to find a way to make a deal for him? I know he said he wanted to be traded, and he wasn't by the deadline, but what do you think happens with him?
Releasing him, or you mean in the offseason?
It would have to be offseason.
Right.
No,
they're not going to release him. Yeah.
I don't know. They may explore that again.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's the kind of guy that, it didn't seem like he is just irate at the organization.
You think he has value left to a team?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think so for sure.
He was great when he was here in week one of the opener. Yeah. He made some great catches.
He did.
Impressive.
Yeah. And I think he's had relative to that team and who's throwing him the ball, I think he's had a pretty solid year. I certainly think he's got a few more years left. I think he'd be a great addition to a lot of teams that either, need that, are trying to incorporate a receiving tight end, or they just need that offensive, a veteran, offensively. I don't know, but I think he definitely has value. Now, the thing is, in the NFL, teams can rebound and recover really quick, so maybe he likes Kansas City enough and likes the organization enough that he'll see where they're going and where they're headed in this offseason. But, I'm sure like anyone else, he probably had that inkling during the trading deadline time recently where, hey, I might have an opportunity here to get on a winning team. And that probably affected him a little bit. And now he's probably come to terms with the fact, okay, I'm going to be here the rest of the season and then, reassess the situation afterwards. But no question. I think he's still in that upper echelon of tight ends.
I don't think we had a chance to get to your nitpick, Bilo. Did you have one other than what we discussed?
Cornerback is what stands out mostly. I just think that they didn't get the job done, and it's not like this week. Torrey Holt is a good veteran receiver, a little bit on the decline. Donnie Avery is emerging. Who's his Keenan?
By the way, I do like Donnie Avery.
Gotta like Donnie
Avery. I was impressed.
Oh, yeah.
He's got that slipperiness to him, that I think it's just one of those, qualities that's really hard to define about a receiver.
But I just think in this game, Steven Jackson doesn't play. You probably figured they're going to test these wides, they're going to go deep, and they just couldn't. They just didn't get the job done. And it was disappointing early on because you're seeing these guys just – it wasn't like – in some cases, the Patriots got absolutely burnt. And then some other cases, they were there and they tackled each other. I mean, like Delta O'Neal and Hobbs one time. I think that happened twice. I just thought it was not a very pretty situation out there at cornerback. That would certainly be number one. And I don't know. I think that that they made some strides as far as rushing the passer. I mean, the Dalis Thomas came up big and Seymour as well. And you've got to love what Falk was able to do. But cornerback would be number one for me. The play of the cornerbacks, the inability to recognize and really rebound until the very end of the game, and be able to defend these deep plays. And until the Patriots find a way to consistently cover the deep ball, Peyton Manning's going to go deep on this team.
Mm-hmm.
Trent Edwards is going to go deep on this team. Brett Favre is going to go deep on this team. I don't see when that's going to stop unless and until the Patriots show that they can stop it. And I don't know if I see that coming.
Well, we'll see Peyton Manning have an opportunity to go deep on the Patriots coming up next. And we'll spend largely the next 2 days talking about the matchup with the Colts, certainly coming up on Sunday night in Indy. What about Patriots today? What do we have on store?
Well, I mentioned we've got a look at the UK Patriots and hear from a few of them. I was talking about the cornerback situation and the similarities between what happened on Sunday Sunday and what happened 4 years ago against St. Louis, the day that Troy Brown made his defensive back debut.
Well,
so
hey,
we go back in time a little bit.
Should we go get somebody from the offensive side to put in the secondary now?
Maybe we
should. Take the old Troy Brown role?
Maybe Wes Welker is that next guy. But, you know, every 4 years they play St. Louis and they run into this just a terrible situation at cornerback. So talking about that, a few other news notes and just starting to get the ball rolling on previewing the Colts, much like this radio show and our show the next couple of days, it'll be all about Pat's Colts.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Hey,
hanging in there.
Thank you.
Michael gets the yeoman medal for today.
He gets a gold star. That's a big performance.
So I will talk to you for a little bit tomorrow then, at the very least, right?
Yeah, why the hell not?
Why not? Okay. Michael will be along for his normal Wednesday appearance inside the playbook.
I'm one and done, John.
Yeah, I know you
I'm
are.
One and done. But except for the fantasy lowdown, Thursday at
which
4.
Which will be Thursday at 4
nice.
Eastern
back
time,
in this,
right?
On these airwaves.
There
yes.
you go. Yeah. Perfect. All right, thanks to Mike Perrini. Thanks to Brian Lowe. Thanks to you for all of the good nitpick emails today. Always good to have your participation. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. Manana.